Blog Talk Radio.
All right, guys, thanks for joining me. I'm your host, Brian Onyx Sons. This is Onyx Knight's Paranormal Radio. Tonight I've got my good friends Gene St. Jean and Jeff Byers with Creature Replica. They're going to be joining me. For those that don't know, Creature Replica is a line of action figures that's coming out. It's going to focus on cryptids, but also various other creatures from fantasy and legend. Gene and Jeff are real good friends of mine. It's going to be a good show. We talk at least once a week, and I'm really invested in this action figure line, and really want to see it take off and continue into future waves. I feel like it will. We're going to get into all that. We're going to touch base with Gene, who went to San Diego Comic-Con, and get the scoop on that. We're going to find out what the future holds. And we're just going to talk basic Sasquatch cryptid type things. Thanks for joining. Stay with me. I'm going to go ahead and take a quick commercial. And we're going to get back with Gene St. Jean and Jeff Byers and Creature Replica.
Going to New Orleans for the weekend? For vacation? Are you wanting to take a ghost hunting tour but tired of the same old walking tours where you don't even get to go into the location? And you're not even sure if the history is accurate? Well, call NOLA Ghost Hunting Tours. This team of guys are going to take you into a real haunted location where you're going to get to use the state-of-the-art equipment that ghost hunters use. Be the paranormal investigator. You get to work with an experienced, competent team of investigators and have the real, true paranormal experience. Experience the dark side of New Orleans. Call NOLA Ghost Hunting Tours. They have tours Friday through Monday. Tours start at 7 and at 10 p.m. For more information, call 504-708-3567.
All right, guys. Thanks for coming back. I appreciate it. Like I said, we have Gene St. Gene and Jeff Byers from Creature Replica. You guys are going to get a feel of what exactly is going on with this line. And as you guys know, I promote the hell out of this line. And I will continue to for as long as it takes, because I'm really stoked about this. I'm a big action figure fanatic. And then also the Sasquatch research. I mean, this is just right up my alley. It's everything that I like all combined into one. That being said, we're going to go ahead and get Gene and Jeff on the line with us. Hey, guys, you there?
Right here, man.
Hey, Brian, how are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing, Jeff Rowe?
I am wonderful. I'm wonderful.
Guys, you know, we talk all the time, and you guys know how adamant I am about this line of action figures. In my opinion, it was genius in the making. And as I said before to you guys in private and on other shows, I was actually thinking about doing something like this myself, though I don't have the connections that of course Gene has, but it was so needed in my opinion, from a not only an action figure standpoint, but being a Sasquatch researcher from that standpoint as well. And I thank you guys for getting together and making this happen. I mean, you know, you guys know how I feel about it.
Yeah, that's for sure, dude. I mean, a big part of us ending up doing it was we were both really wanted to do something like this, and there's really nothing out there. It's really never been tried wholeheartedly, only in, like, little sporadic attempts here and there. The toy industry doesn't typically take an awful lot of chances, especially nowadays. There's more action figures than ever being produced, but they all tend to be produced around popular movie and toy and
or comic television,
book licenses. Yeah, generally a toy line, if it's going to be successful, the best risk you can take is on something that has some sort of a media presence to drive it, like a video game or, you know, one of the other things we mentioned. So something like this that's based in folklore and, you know, kind of oddball pop culture type things, generally it's not a risk people want to take. So I've pitched this type of line before, and it never got any traction for exactly that reason, because action figures are an incredibly expensive proposition, and to do anything that's kind of a risk, you really could lose your shirt. Even an established company, you know, they could really take a loss if it's not something that takes off. So typically that's why you see everybody does Spider-Man, everybody does Freddy Krueger. I mean, they don't step outside of anything unless they really assess it as, you know, a reasonable risk with a significant payout at the end of it. So,
but see,
you know, it's a labor of love.
Right. Between us, I mean, you know, I mean, I'm not clueless when it comes to the action figures and the action figure world. And between us, I think right now is an ideal time for these action figures. You know, you've got shows like Finding Bigfoot. You've got Mountain Monsters, Trapper and them with Mountain Monsters. And then there's these other shows that I just got the permissions, I guess you will, to advertise and promote Swamp Monsters and Monsters Underground. So, you know, it's really booming right now in the world of cryptids and particular Sasquatch. And Gene, you and I, Jeff, you and I talked about it too. I think that now's the time to strike, you know, for lack of better terminology. I think that
when we first started talking about it, our one of our concerns was, you know, to get the thing up and running as quickly as possible. So, you know, you don't know how long television shows are gonna last. So when we first started talking, like the end of last summer, the hot show was Finding Bigfoot, which had had a few seasons in, and you don't know how many more seasons it's necessarily going to last. And, of course, there's always tons of documentary stuff on History Channel and whatnot. But and then the $10 million Bigfoot bounty was going to start. And so we were nervous about, well, we got to get this out. What if these shows don't get renewed, then this starts to fall off as a, you know, not in, as an interest in general, but where you really want it to be is hot on television, because then it's, like you said, it's the best opportunity to do this type of thing is now. And then, you know, this year, with all these new shows being announced, that just kind of, you know, guarantees that the television shows are going to drive this field of interest for the next few years. So you're right. It's perfect timing.
Now I want to go. I want to backtrack a little bit if we can, Gene, Jeff. I want to know how everything began. How you came into it, and how it all started, if you will.
How it all started, as far as just from my standpoint.
Well, you guys getting together and Creature Replica forming.
Okay, what point in history when we got together? I'm sorry, I had to loosen my collar after hearing Gene talk about how hard it was to start the company. I had to get back in mode here. I'm kidding. But it's always nice to put stuff back into perspective, because no matter how much you love something, it's always, you know, anytime you do anything major, it's a scary deal. But as far as me, I was introduced to Gene through another friend, basically because I had learned that Gene had kind of the same interests, and I didn't know how far, and I soon learned real quick that he had way more knowledge than me about certain things, because I tried to run with him for a little bit, and that doesn't work.
That's what most people don't realize. You know, Gene's not just somebody that one day said, hey, you know, I think I'm going to make a Bigfoot action figure. He surprises me with how much he knows in regards to cryptids and in particular Sasquatch.
Oh, it's amazing. I'll tell you what, there isn't a better person. And I am biased, yes, I will admit that, but I'll tell you, there is not a better person to be doing this, because of the love of the subject itself, the cryptids, and the knowledge. And this is stuff that's been building. It's not just, oh, let's, we have an idea, now let's research it. This is stuff that he's always loved. And here I am, I'm talking about Gene. This is kind of weird. The same things affected us. It's really weird, because not too often, you know, I've made some pretty good friends, two or three here since we got into this business. And you're one of them, Brian. But not too often can you just start talking to somebody and you just start talking like you've been friends your whole life.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that played into this. I mean, a lot of this stuff would never have happened had there not been an instant kind of a, hey, this guy's cool. I mean, you know, and that is how that part of it, just how the, hey, let's try this started, for me anyway.
Well, that's funny you mentioned that, because when I first started talking to Gene, I didn't realize at the time who he was. I mean, I've got his action figures. I know his work. It just didn't register, and we just started talking, just as two guys, you know, shooting the shit about Sasquatch and stuff. And then he sent me his link to his DeviantArt page, and I'm like, holy crap, I know who this is, you know. And it just took off from there. And I'm thankful. I'm really thankful that we were able to establish that friendship prior to, you know, I mean, Gene, come on,
yeah,
man. You got to admit, dude, you're pretty famous, you know.
Certainly in my own mind.
For those who don't know, Gene has been in the action figure world. How long, Gene? 20, 25 years, I think you told me.
No, about 20. It's about 20
yeah.
years.
And you've made action figures for McFarlane, who many people might not recognize his name, but he's the guy who was behind the Spawn. And you've also done work for Marvel Select and a few others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much. At where I'm at right now, you'd be hard-pressed not to have something of mine in your collection at this point. I developed probably 6 or 8 properties across the boards for a couple different companies. So
well, I'll tell you,
my work's pretty common out there.
I bought your when you worked for McFarlane, you did the darkness from the movie Legend,
mm-hmm.
and yeah. I bought that. I loved it. And then more recently, I picked up your Venom from Spider-Man
mm-hmm.
Comics, and that thing was so just dope, man. To be honest with you, all the different heads, the arms, the different attachments. When I got it, I was like, this thing rocks. You know, whoever did it did a damn good job. And I am honored to say that I'm, you know, that you consider me a friend. Because, I mean, your work is just totally awesome.
Oh, I appreciate that, dude. I mean, I lose perspective on how common and kind of out there my work tends to be because, I mean, I literally work continually, like 16, 18 hours a day just to keep on top of the amount of stuff that I do during the year. So the only time I kind of slow down at all is when we hit San Diego because I have 3 or 4 days off and just kind of hang out with the people I work with all year.
Yeah, but even that is...
so it always kind of strikes me a little odd if someone comes up to me that actually recognizes me or something or happens to know my name from one of the packages, which, by the way, I just showed a new Carnage figure in San Diego that I did for Diamond. So there's a Carnage coming that's going to match, you know, the Venom and the Flash Venom that I did and the Anti-Venom, the whole symbiote clan that I've worked on for Diamond Select up to this point.
I've got to try to get that Carnage for sure. You know, we kind of got a little sidetracked, but Jeff, you okay? Let's go back. You got in touch with Gene.
Actually, the first time I met Gene, I went to his studio. we wasn't going to mess around. Went to his studio, you know, and I got to see some of these prototypes and stuff. I mean, everything that you see on the DeviantArt site, not everything, but some of that stuff is there. And holy cow, is it impressive when you're there. And, you know, we talked. We actually stood in his doorway for about 3 hours. It didn't seem like it because we just got to talk about everything that affected us. Like, you know, we both were ruined at an early age by the Boggy Creek movie. I mean, that was probably the first thing that, well, there's actually 2 things. That, and then I remember that one of those specials that you could catch on primetime TV once in a while might have had Leonard Nimoy or Stacy Keach or, I'm not sure, somebody narrating it where they were doing the, and you guys, you both will remember the show. Man, I digress. Easy, don't I? The show that they're in the canoe and they're pulling in their fishing lines at dark, and one of the fishing lines is caught, and the one guy, or he might have been, a Native American holds his light up, and a Sasquatch is right there by the canoe, and you just like jump. Do you remember that show by any chance?
Might have been like Mysterious Monsters or one of those.
Was it a television show or was it an actual movie?
That part was a television show.
I'm sorry. What was that, Jeff?
I think it was just one of those hour television shows because they were going through a whole bunch of different type quick.
I don't.
You know,
the one that comes to mind was where the guy was fishing and the Sasquatch was on the other side of where he was fishing at on the other bank. Is that the one you're referring to?
He's right there. He was against the canoe. He was right there, and he's entangled in the fishing lines, and everybody gets scared and runs.
No, I don't think I caught that show.
That there are certain things that not necessarily that one, but certain things that affected us, and we slowly developed a little dialoguing back and forth on email and phone calls, and it was pretty much a done deal right off the start. If we were going to do it, Gene was going to do it. You know, he was going to be the man, and it's been a pretty, amazing ride. I actually, timing-wise, I think the first time we showed the figures was at that first Horror Hound convention in Cincinnati, and two of the figures he was still working on. Like, we set up on a Friday, and we showed, and when I got there Friday, one of the figures was waiting for me at the hotel, Gene had sent, and then I got the next one on a Saturday, the Yeti. I got him. I didn't even see the final thing, and I opened it up, and I'm just like, oh, my gosh. And that was the first time we showed the figures. But
Did you have to change your shorts?
Oh, my gosh. I had the same exact reaction as the other people that come in there and looked at it, because I was excited. I would tell them, I just got this an hour ago.
Yeah, that Yeti is massive. Guys listening, I posted some images a while back. I'll be posting images throughout the show regarding the scale, and this thing is huge. And the Sasquatch and the other ones are small or not much smaller than this Yeti. And these things are it's a good chunk of plastic. So you guys took off with this, and I mean it's going. Gene, you just came back from San Diego Comic Con. How did that go?
Went really great. I mean, from day one. I mean, anything that you're particularly geeked on yourself, you can't exactly look at it completely objectively because you're so into it. And it's sort of compounded for us because we're producing the figures ourselves, and I'm sculpting the stuff. I'm painting most of it myself, so I'm pretty close to it. So I've been trying to keep a certain amount of objectivity about how it may or may not perform commercially. But everything we've done as far as showing the things up to this point, people have really jumped on board. So I was hoping for the same response in San Diego. And the guys I work for at Diamond, I'm working with them through their marketing and sales division, so they agreed to show the stuff in San Diego. So one side of the Diamond Comics distributor's booth basically was practically my side of the booth, because there was a huge cover for the next issue of Previews with my Sin City line, and then there was one case had my Universal Monsters, one case had my Sin City figures, and then the next case was all our Creature Replica stuff. So essentially we owned that corner of the booth. And everybody stopped to look at those figures because they're different than anything else in there. And I had a few meetings with different retailers because even though Diamond has interest in doing the distribution, we figured we'd do a little legwork ourselves. And as we make the contacts and introduce the line personally to retailers, then we punt them on over to Diamond. So when they go into their sales meeting with Diamond, they already have a building interest and a knowledge of what the line is. So, we're kind of front-loading the deck a little bit. So as we drive the retailers towards them, they already have an interest. So their response to it was really great, and for a lot of the same reasons that we were looking at it, too, because it's something that no one else is doing. We're going in the complete opposite direction of most companies whose figures are getting smaller and smaller. We decided to do figures that are as big as we want them to be. They work within, the 6-7 inch scale format. They relate to those, and they're highly articulated with bases. A lot of it has to do with, I'm pretty influenced by the companies that I mainly work for are Diamond Select and DC Direct. And Diamond Select is one of those companies that's still maintaining a nice large format figure with a diorama that comes with them. They refuse to give up working in that scale because somebody's got to put out figures that are worth the money that you're paying. And since I have a huge hand in their Select division, as far as the action figure stuff, I'm I'm developing Kill Bill, Sin City. I kind of jump in and out of the Marvel thing. So
now, I have
I really wanted to play in that arena.
Right, I have to play the role of our listener. I have to play the role of our listeners at this point in time. I know the answers, but for the listener's sake, I have to ask: are there any plans to reduce the scale? There are a lot of listeners and collectors who collect the smaller scale.
Well, we have ideas for different kind of product categories that we might put our toe in the water for. Basically, if we can garner interest from a large retailer like Toys R Us or Walmart or Target or something, we'll do whatever we need to get into one of those stores, because that's a life or death thing. I mean, that changes the whole profile of the business if we have a mass retailer. But it'll kind of depend. Everything's going to depend on that first wave of figures. If that first wave of figures grabs a toehold, which usually means your first line out, you're basically, you want to do better than break even, and you certainly don't want to lose money. So if you can make some money and have it make enough sense to keep moving forward, then you can start considering other options to kind of build on what you already have. So you don't want to inflate the company too much where you can't handle the amount of money that's going out and balance it. And we don't want to do two different scales of figures, because then you just compete with yourself. But we have some ideas on how to address exactly that, but it's just a little early in the game to say definitively what it is we have planned. But we definitely have some things we're considering that would work really well. It's just a matter of how we time them so that things don't compete with what we already are going to have out there, and where we'd actually place them. You know, you can't place everything with one distributor if it's too close in terms of the type of product. So it'll depend on where this stuff's going to be put.
And you guys listening, you don't know this, but I really push this line. I'm always working. I'm always trying to push it. And here's the thing: if you guys want all this stuff, the easy, and I'm gonna get on some math here. The easiest and best way to get it is to buy the figures. Buy the figures that are coming out. I'm telling you, because if those do well, then Gene and Jeff and Creature Replica will be able to move forward to that next level. You know, it's all about that progress. And you know, like I said, Gene, Jeff, you guys know I'm always pushing this line. You know, when Trapper and Jeff from Mountain Monsters was on the show, I talked to them about it. They loved it. They loved the idea. Hopefully that'll play out into something great. Elliot Guidry from the upcoming show Swamp Monsters, he loved it. Everyone that I've shown these figures to has loved it. You know, I've got Mike Woolley and Debbie McMartin with the Skookum movie. They love it. They want to get on board. Michael Hall and those guys with Something in the Woods, that movie, they love it. They want to get on board. You know me, Jeff, Gene. Y'all know me. I'm going to push the hell out of this.
You're all over it, man, and we appreciate it. You're right there.
Because I want to see it. I want to see it happen, and I want to see it grow. I mean, we've talked about all this in private, and this is a dream come true. I've wanted so badly for so long for someone to do an accurate looking Sasquatch action figure. I've wanted it for so long, and up until now, and Gene, I know you know as well, up until now all we got was these crappy cartoony looking one, and then there was one done a few years ago. I'm trying to remember who did it. I think Mezco.
Yeah, they did a 3¾-inch. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it, yeah. And it had no nose and mouth. It was just eyes and hair.
Yeah.
And
it's very well, interpretive.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was good at that point in time. I
they
still
were
didn't
cool.
Feel...
When that's all it was, those were cool. I mean, at that time,
yeah.
That was all there was, and it was neat.
Yeah, yeah.
And up to this time, to this day, that's the only actual... Maybe I'm wrong, but I doubt it, because I'm pretty all over the action figure thing, and they're the only company that's actually done a line of cryptids. I mean, maybe there's some real cheese whiz kind of dollar store companies that are doing it. Like, there's one really crappy-looking Bigfoot you can kind of buy. But,
well, there was another company that was supposed...
They're the only company that's actually done a line of cryptids.
Right, and I believe, and I might be wrong, there was another company that was supposed to put out a line of cryptids, but it never saw the light of day.
Yeah, that may still be happening. I mean, I think they did a Kickstarter or something, but yeah. No,
this was years ago, Gene. This was,
was it that video game thing where there was like this big weird-looking Sasquatch with a receding hairline?
I don't remember the Sasquatch, but I remember they were supposed to do a Loch Ness monster. It was real cool looking. It was real pearly and fishy looking. And they were going to do a Mothman and I think a Jersey Devil.
Mm-hmm. And, well, I know Mez did all those. You're not thinking of the Mez line?
I don't know. I might be. I thought it was called Legendary something or another.
Oh, that might be the new guys that are doing one. Yeah,
that's the new guys, yeah.
Yeah.
Are you
they're
sure?
Kind of
because this was back around 2001, 2002.
I think Legendary Monsters has been trying to do that for a long time, trying to get it going.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
They've been talking about it for a few years. It just,
I gotcha.
They did a Kickstarter thing, but I mean, I don't know. But it's a whole different thing. Apples and bananas.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we're not doing anything like that, thank God.
All right, guys. Now I've got someone asking, so I've got to get to this. The release date.
Well, we've kind of had to push it a little bit here and there because of production issues and whatnot. So we're right now we're looking at the spring, 2015, the spring. You know, we'll be able to kind of whittle down a more exact date in the next month or so, but that's basically what we're looking at right now. Originally, we were really hoping to hit December of this year, but with kind of the hang-ups we ran into, it just wasn't possible. So rather than try to rush through and sort of half-ass things, we figured we'd just give ourselves some breathing room and push it off by a few more months. So that's where we're looking at the thing landing the first wave in around the spring of 2015.
Gotcha. You know, I just got some really great news. I can't really share it right now, but it's really great news.
Can you
guys?
I don't.
You just saved
a lot of money on your fire insurance.
Yeah. I just saved. Yeah.
Is that Gecko on the other line?
No, you guys, I'm going to tell you in just a minute, just bear with me. It's good for you guys, too. I mean, you know me, I'm always working them angles. Okay, I'm going to tell you guys, and you guys listening, Les Stroud is going to be on here with me.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
awesome.
I heard his story about being charged by the Bigfoot in Alaska.
But see,
you know, he told Chris that he didn't. It's wild.
I'm speechless. He's like a staple. Survivor Man show is a staple at our house. Yep. It's just the greatest.
Yep, I'm trying to get him on. I'm trying to get him on for the week after next.
Oh, that's very cool.
I didn't want to jinx myself. I didn't want to say anything until I knew for certain. But you know, my buddy, our fellow team member Michael Hall, has been working on it, and he just asked me when I want them on, and so it's looks like it's going to be good to go. And you know, if you watch this show, he never really talked much about exactly what went down when he was in Alaska and then when he was in Northern Ontario. He just mentioned something happened. I want to try to get to the meat of that and find out what happened. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to, you know, bring that up. I don't mean to take away you guys' thunder, but I want to share that with you guys because you guys are part of the team, and it'll be a good move for everyone, I believe.
Oh yeah, that dude's wicked cool. I mean, I'm excited to see somebody who's a legitimate outdoorsman like that dude getting into this field a little bit and at least kind of looking into the legitimacy of it, because that could change the perception of the research that's going on now. I mean, there's a lot of people who are, you know, basically amateur naturalists who are carrying the load of doing the research, and to get more people involved is better than not. I mean, maybe as more people that are a little more prestigious get involved, then maybe at some point science starts taking a little more serious look at the anecdotal evidence, so that there's more of a concerted effort to seriously look at it. I mean, because there's only so far the average person can do as far as funds and time to get out into the field, you know, and there's a lot of people out there that are committing a lot of time to research. And I know you yourself, you go out like almost every night.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people that do that, but... You know, the average guy's got only so much time and only so much money to throw at the issue. A cat like that, he could help to change the perception of.
Well, I've got a lot of time. I don't know much. I don't know about a lot of money, but.
Well, that's
you
what
know.
I mean. That's what I mean, man.
Yeah, but.
Well, he's going to change the whole face of it. You're right. I heard that he was getting that other show, the Bigfoot. Special. I mean, that just totally changed the. We took it too serious. Not that anything else is serious; they're all serious. But it just kind of changed it because he has been trusted as the outdoor guy. I mean, at least in my world, for so long.
Well,
and oh, I got to tell you, Brian. I got to tell you something. I'm gonna stop. You said, you know, we're talking about other people. While we're in that mode, your show with John and Jeff.
Trapper?
Those were awesome shows. Yeah. Those two shows were just, I was right there. In fact, I was texting you.
Yeah.
Jay and Bayla. She's awesome. And I will buy those audio. But I just wanted to say, those two shows were great.
Oh, I'm definitely going to have her back on real soon, hopefully, with the release of the film. I'm going to get her back on also. You know, guys, as far as Les goes, I'm going to try to get him over here with me. I'm pretty sure it'll happen. I've been told that there's a good chance that it could happen. So
it's huge.
I didn't want to say anything until I was 100% certain, and I'm still not 100% certain, but I'm hopeful. You know, I'm hopeful. You know, anything could happen in between, of course. But yeah, it's leaning that way.
Then we'll see if you can hang with the big boys out in the forest.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I hear you. Now, guys, I just gave a good reveal. Do you guys have a good reveal?
Yeah, we obviously we have like. Few more lines of stuff that's kind of mapped out. And, you know, so we already pretty much know what we're going to do for Wave 2, so we kind of talked about what we would say, you know, and actually the one we'll reveal is actually something that Jeff really wanted to do. It's sort of it's a little bit of an offshoot from the cryptid thing in a way, but another kind of area of interest that I'm sort of geeked in and have been since I was a little kid. So one of the four creatures in the next line is going to be an alien gray. And we have kind of a We're not going to get into specifics of how we're going to present it, but it'll the way we're putting it together is going to surprise people.
Right, right, right. That's awesome. You know, you listeners, you got to keep in mind, there's cryptids in the line, but the name of the line is Creature Replica, not Cryptid Replica, Creature Replica. You know, so you're going to see all kinds of different creatures, and from cryptids to paranormal fantasy. Am I right in saying that, Gene?
Yeah, the basic idea is that it started out with some cryptid based line, but once we started sliding into doing some of the werewolf stuff with the Rougarou and the Horror Hound, we decided to kind of leave it a little more loose, so we'll be doing anything from cryptozoology to folklore to Native American mythology, which also kind of straddles some of those. And just pretty much anything that we think is cool and kind of hits us in just that right way as we're developing a line. And as we go along, as if there's any kind of breakthroughs in any of this research, like the one we've been waiting on for the longest time has been definitive proof of the Orang Pendek, which is probably the most plausible of any of this stuff. And so if they get pictures of that little bugger, he's going in whatever line is on the chopping block at that time. He's getting pumped right in there. Because the first line was going to be all relic type ape man, and he was going to have a spot in the first line, so we kind of shifted things around a bit, so he's definitely somebody that's on the waiting list.
Yeah, I'm getting some feedback from Jeff's line. Jeff, are you there? Jeff? Gene, I think he's trying to talk, but it's not coming through clearly.
Man, he should try to. Jeff, you should try to call back in. It sounds like the connection.
Yeah. Yeah, we're gonna get Jeff to call back in. But you know, when you say plausible, you said Orang Pendek is the most plausible. Elaborate a little further, if you will, on what you mean by that. I mean, I know what you mean, but for our listeners.
Well, I think as far as something that can be found imminently, like that thing has about as long a history of being kind of talked about in local folklore in Sumatra for as long as the Sasquatch. Like, I didn't realize, I had only heard about the Orang Pendek like maybe 10 years ago. And I just happened to be reading through all these old books from the 60s and 70s. I'm reading Ivan Sanderson's book, Abominable Snowmen, right now.
Yeah.
And that was written around like in the early 60s, like I think it was like 61, 63, something like that. And he was talking about the Orang Pendek there. And so that thing has supposedly even been cited by this woman was like a biologist or a botanist or something that was working in that region, and she actually saw it. And it's basically similar mythos to the Sasquatch, where it's an upright hominid. This apparently resembles resembles an orangutan, but it walks upright and has a footprint that's kind of not quite a straight 8-footprint. It kind of looks like it may have a partially divergent toe, like maybe the foot is sort of an in-between, sort of an amalgam of a human and 8-foot. You know, so it'd be interesting. It could turn out to be a third species of orangutan. I guess there's basically two types of orangutans. They're common in Asia, and I forget the other part of the world that they're common in, and then this could potentially be a third species of orangutan pongid. So
what you're saying
in terms
is
of, so that's what I mean, in terms of plausible, you know, like we have hundreds of years of folklore from Native Americans of Sasquatch, and
right.
We also have about 100 years of, settler, white American settler type folklore. If you read some of the books where stories of what they call the what is it and gorillas and things in the United States. And then there's all the and then obviously after the PGF film, there's all the common current type of reports and things. So, and it's still, that's, it's all anecdotal evidence. Really, since the Patterson film, there's really been no substantial game-changing evidence. There's been a lot of footprints. There's been a lot of, questionable video things and photographs, but nothing that was a game-changer. There's sort of been little building blocks added to it, but all of it's controversial. You look at things like the Skookum cast, which there's elements of anatomy within the Skookum cast that are very interesting, but it's still not definitive. And like a lot of things, like even some of the things that are super interesting, like the Cripplefoot cast, some of them are associated with researchers that are a little bit squirrely and are open to interpretation, So there's always an element of, is this person's interpretation objective, or is there a certain amount of pareidolia in there that's informing their thing? I mean, I like to look at Meldrum as probably the best example of someone who looks at things very objectively. Obviously, he believes in the possibility of the creature, but he's going to look at the evidence and sort of weigh it very carefully. And, and there's, probably at this point, there's probably hundreds of people out there in the field taking what little spare time they can put into it to do their type of research. But, what really is needed is a concerted long-term effort out in the field. And there's a handful of groups that are actually doing that, the NAWAC guys down in the Big Thicket.
Right.
If you listen to any of the shows they do about Area X, they're in there getting, allegedly very interesting things happening. And they go in for extended periods. They're probably in there for 2-3 months solid during the summer months with rotating teams. They're the only one I really hear about regularly. There's other guys that are talked about, like the Olympic Project and stuff. And then there's the super secret ones that every once in a while come out with a picture of a Chewy mask, and that's about it. And then they disappear again. So, that's sort of my roundabout way of saying what I mean by plausible. I think there's an awful lot of plausibility to the Sasquatch. But I think there's so much baggage to the Sasquatch. With the Orang Pendek, it's sort of always been described as the same thing. There's not a lot of debate about a lot of different attributes. You don't hear a lot about supernatural attributes and, superpowers and stunning abilities and all these different things. Sasquatch, there's a lot of different camps. And I think a lot of the difference in opinion on it is what sort of pulls the community apart, and a lot of it makes the creature into more of a mythological creature for anyone who's looking at it from outside of the field of interest. I look at it in the way that some of the guys that I look up to in the field, like Meldrum, would look at it, in terms of this being some sort of relic hominid or an undiscovered great ape, something that you could actually see and capture and study. If this is a supernatural creature, like some people believe, or something that crept out of a UFO or some sort of an alien construct, then we're not going to figure it out. I'm nutty enough to believe in some of those things. I just don't think they apply to this particular creature. And, of course, that's my opinion. In this field,
right.
This field, in my personal opinion, is like 99% opinion, and there's maybe 5% of plausible, solid evidence, and most of that is the footprint.
That's the thing we have to keep in mind.
The footprint evidence completely.
Right, right. Unfortunately, the scientific community doesn't think the footprints is enough evidence to, you know, validate biological. But, you know,
the irony of that is that footprint evidence is used all the time to establish the stomping grounds of any other type of creature. It's just we're not talking about a creature that's commonplace. If you found the footprints of a big cat in a certain area of forest and identified it as such definitively, there would be a little bit of debate because, say, an animal wouldn't be indigenous to a certain area, so there'd be that debate. But there wouldn't be no debate that something like a mountain lion exists. This is something that doesn't even believe exists.
That's the thing about this field is, you know, one person's theory at this point in time, one person's theory is just as good as another person's. You know, until one of them is either captured or studied in its own natural environment. You know, we're all pretty much kind of just guessing and hoping that we're right. You know, as far as the Sasquatch extraterrestrial thing, I have my thoughts on that. I don't think Sasquatch is extraterrestrial. I have my thoughts on that. I've talked about it many times here on the show already. We won't go down that road tonight. Jeff is back with us. Jeff, you're with us, right?
Yes, sir.
All right, we got you. Jeff was having some audio difficulties there.
Can I chime in about what you guys were talking about?
Yep, no, man. Shut up. Yeah, you can chime in.
No, we're talking about, you know, people hypothesizing about what's going on now. And for me, and kind of how, you know, what we started, everything we do, unless we want to go a little more surreal and have fun with it like the Yeti, has been, you know, Native American accounts or things that are substantiated by a witness account or a picture or something. But what I was going to say in regards to what you're talking about, for me, it's you know, how far back, what's our date back in time when we start saying, okay, people probably weren't trying to fake it? I mean, because we can go back to that British Columbia, Ruby Creek in the 40s, the Chapman, where that one lady had to run away with her kids, and then Bluff Creek in the 50s. When they actually coined the term Bigfoot. I mean, or you can go back. I think the first thing, actually I do know, 1811, that fur trader Thompson had these pics. That's 1811. Now, was people trying to fake this stuff back then? I mean, I don't believe that. I mean, how can it be that far back and not be something? I mean,
I've read stories about early settlers in the Americas, early settlers that have ran into these things. And then if you want to go even further back, you know, you can look at all the Native American legends surrounding it. You know?
I give that the most weight.
Guys, you know me. I mean, I'm a straight shooter. You know, I'm brutally honest. I'm not one to tell lies and bullshit. I've seen these things. I have not had a close. I've not had a close, you know, encounter where I can make facial details, but I've seen them at a distance and always in passing. I'm telling you, they're real. I've been out there, and you guys have been following me for a while. I've gotten audios, you know, supposedly possible. The video, there's something on it. I don't know what it is. And Gene, you and I were talking about this earlier today. I'm not going to go and say, hey, this is a Sasquatch. If I'm not 100% certain about something, you know, I'm not going to go and say, hey, this is a Sasquatch. And we're going to get more into that. But the thing is, when I'm out there in the middle of the woods. No, guys, I'm sitting outside. I walked outside, so you're probably hearing a few crickets or whatnot. If so, I apologize for that.
Oh, okay.
if I'm out there in the middle of the woods and I hear a whack, something hitting a tree, a branch hitting a tree, I'm sorry, guys, but it's either going to be a human or something with thumbs.
Sure, possibly.
You know, because I've been in the woods, you know the difference between a deer breaking a little branch or something walking. When you, guys, I'm telling you, man, if you listen to that audio, and I'm sure you guys have, it's clear as day. It's clear as day. Walk! Something hitting the tree, and it's got that deep resonating sound to it. And for me, there's no doubt that they exist. You know, and I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I spend a lot of time in the woods, whether we're, you know, camping or four-wheeling or whatever we do, and the sound of a limb, they fall all the time. But that's a very distinctive, there's a cracking, it's a cracking, ripping, I mean, it's a totally different sound. You don't ever hear like a wood pound on wood firm. I mean, it's always a cracking, popping type thing, and then a crash. I mean, you can tell when a limb falls out of the tree. It happens all the time. Something different. I'm kind of with you on that. Something that's that distinct of a sound is, you know, is being made. And if it happens more than once, you know, there's only one conclusion there.
Oh yeah. There's that, and then there's also what I like to call, log slamming. That's the only way I can describe it. As if they found a log and they just slam it hard to the ground. When you have one of those, yeah, okay, it could be just a branch falling. But when you have one of those with other curious circumstances at the same time, then it kind of leans more towards, you know, it being a Sasquatch. When you have three of those, and I've had this, when you have three of those coming from three different places around you all within 20 seconds, it's pretty obvious something's there wanting you to keep moving.
Wow. Wow. Brian, will you take me Bigfooting?
Hey, I told you, man, anytime you want to get down here. In fact, in October, I'm going to be going over to Boggy Creek. And with the team that's over there, and we're going to be going out on an expedition over around Boggy Creek. You know, I'm sure you're more than welcome to come along. You're part of the team, you know, also. But Gene and I spoke today, and I mean it's the same with you, Jeff. When we get on the phone, man, we're going for 2-3 hours without even realizing it. But, you know, we were talking today about, and I'm not going to mention any names because I don't want to have all that crap. There's these certain teams, these certain people who post pictures left and right of trees or stumps and, oh, there's a Bigfoot, there's a Bigfoot, there's a Bigfoot. That's ridiculous. Yeah, that's totally ridiculous. If you can't tell in my pictures what it is, you know, I'm not gonna say, hey, this is a Sasquatch. I'll say, look at this, it looks interesting. What do you think? You know, I'm not gonna go and lay claim because I mean, you know, and that's the thing. These guys want their 15 minutes of fame. They want to get out there, so they're out there making shit happen on their own. You know, for the attention, and in actuality, what they don't realize is they're actually hurting us more than helping the cause.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the thing is too is that everyone's so enthusiastic, and there's a lot, and especially there's more and more new people jumping into the field since it's gotten so much play on the TV, and there was a lot of people anyway. And what happens, I think people really want to belong. So I don't think it's necessarily always a dishonest thing. I think that, you know, like you're saying, they see all sorts of stuff and they really want it to be some kind of a creature. And they take the pictures and bring it in. And then at least, even if it's nothing, it gives them something to contribute to the whole community, and people bat their pictures around back and forth and, you know, talk about what's what. Argue about this, and then somebody does their analysis. I mean, it's, I think majority of it is good natured, but then there's a certain amount of it that's, you know, people that are kind of pissing in the pool. You know what I mean?
Well, and well, yeah. I mean, there's certain there's certain people who have who claim who claim to have these habituation sites, and you know, if you want to be one of their sheep and follow everything they post and say, I mean, hell, they go out there and sing Kumbaya with Sasquatch every weekend, you know?
Yeah.
And,
I mean,
and
if they legitimately have something, I'm like, game on. You know, bring something forward. You know, solve the mystery so that there can be an all, you know, across-the-boards protection for these creatures. Because if these are real animals, which obviously I'm on the yay Bigfoot side, so I believe they're out there, then these are potentially one of the most rare creatures on the planet, and they have to be protected. You know, granted, up to this point, they've been doing a pretty damn good job of staying out of the way of a bullet themselves. Nobody's come up with a body. Nobody's come up with any sort of definitive proof to really put these things in danger.
Well,
and even if these guys are discovered definitively tomorrow, that doesn't mean that every Yahoo with a rifle is all of a sudden going to be able to find them. Because they've been able to hide themselves pretty damn effectively from getting killed for about 50 years since the Patterson film. And we have nothing substantive in terms of a body up to this point. So if they're discovered, that doesn't mean that they're going to all of a sudden be easy to find. But by the same token, if some of these people with these habituation sites have something legitimate, it's really their duty to come across and, you know, and of course that's, who knows? I mean, there's a lot of ways to judge that. They say they don't want to get people involved because they don't want the creatures to be harassed by the government and all this.
Naturally.
And
there's a lot of excuses. I'm going to put this out there. And I don't give a shit who likes it and who don't. I don't believe the habituation site crap. I don't buy it. Because it's nothing. It's nothing to have a cell phone, you know, a cell phone on you. Sneak it out. If you're that close to a Sasquatch where you're sitting there, you know, swapping bananas and shit with it, it's nothing to take a cell phone out of your pocket and hit record. You know?
Right. Well, that's the classic argument. I mean, but by the same token, I live in northern New Jersey, and believe it or not, we have all sorts of friggin' varmint. You know, we have bears, we have deer. My neighbor's kid even saw a coyote on a rock above their driveway one morning early. You name it, we have just about everything. And when I've run across bears in the yard, literally I've almost walked right into them just walking out my front door a couple of times. And the first time I ever saw one here, I had only ever seen a bear alive in person at the Bronx Zoo before. And I was half asleep in the morning drinking my coffee space out my side window into my yard and noticed there was this huge brown lump in between the two bushes in my side yard. And then the huge brown lump lifted its head and looked at me right through the window, and I was like, what the hell? And it stood up. The thing had kind of one of its forelegs was kind of messed up, like broken or something. So this thing's limping along on three legs. So, of course, you know, I put my coffee down, and I tear ass up to my studio where I have my camera. And I'm set up to take professional pictures all the time. So I run up there, I grab my camera. By the time this, like, gimpy bear, by the time I get up there, get my camera, this gimpy-ass bear is already halfway down the hill behind my house. So I end up getting a blurry shot of his head. You can kind of tell it's a bear. You can see the pointed snout in his ears, and he's, like, gnawing away at some leaves or something. But just within, it probably took me 6 minutes to book upstairs. I got, like, a flight of stairs. I got to run all the way across the house. So every time I've tried to get a picture of a bear or even a freaking groundhog, we had a little family of groundhogs this year, and every time they come out, it's sort of become my routine. I go look for them, see which ones are hanging out in the yard. And I sometimes even have my phone in my pocket And by the time I switch on my phone, go to the camera app, get the thing lined up, the little bastard is somewhere else, and I can't get him. So, and that's a groundhog. There's not a lot of intellect going on there other than maybe I'll eat some grass over here or over there. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I can understand how it'd be tough to get pictures of something that's potentially 100 times more intelligent. But by the same token, if you're kicking back with your morning coffee every morning with a family of Sasquatches, like some of these people are basically claiming, I guarantee you, you'd be able to get some sort of a picture. And that's where all the excuses are.
Of course.
Come, you know?
You know, first of all, Gene, I got to mess with you a little bit. You said it took 6 minutes to get up your stairs, right?
Yeah, but I have a big house, man. So I
damn,
have to...
somebody's living like George and Wheezy.
Well, we're moving on up.
I am the Taylor George Jefferson, without a doubt.
Oh, God, I had to do that. I had to throw
he
that
He kind of walked with that same kind of a sway, too.
Exactly. That George Jefferson stuff.
Hey, I got to give you shit, brother. You know what I'm saying?
It's okay. I can give it back.
I love it. Hey, can I throw something out there? Yeah.
No, man. You talk too much. Yeah.
I believe that there are places and there are people that they do have areas where phenomena happen as regularly. And I think
that's right.
There's a lot of stuff out there we don't see. I think we won't see it until the time is right. I just got a feeling. I got a feeling that there is some people very close to something, but I mean, they're not just going to go throw it, you know, on the internet. They're going to wait until it can either be studied or they can sell it to the highest bidder. I mean, I think it's got to be out there.
You know what, man? You kind of hit the nail on the head because, you know, I have a lot of activity here. There's a lot that goes on that I don't talk about. And there's reasons for that. And you guys, I've talked to you in private, and you know, a lot of you know some of the reasons. But I'm not going to put something out there unless it's definitive. And I'm not going to do it for the money. I'm not doing it. Gene, you and I talked about this today. I'm not doing it to prove to the world they exist. You know, I'm doing it for my own personal experience. And if I put something out there, it's going to be strictly through the Onyx Knights Paranoia. I'm not going to do my hard work for someone else to come in and lay claim to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's.
You mean
you're
not going to have a press conference with the body in a freezer?
No, and I'm not going to go. I'm not going to go on tour with the body and shit like that. You know.
You say that now until the big bucks start rolling in, buddy.
No, hey, I'm telling you, man. Because I look at it like this: these things have done perfectly fine for however long we want to think they've been around without our interference.
Exactly.
You know, and we all, I mean, we all live in this world, you know. We're all aware of what happens when humans get involved in anything.
Yeah.
You know, and then again, you know, it goes back to, you know, what you were talking about earlier when you said, you know, someone proving it. It depends on who you talk to, what you believe. You know, there's some of us, myself included, that believes the government is already aware of these things. Just the same way they're aware of panthers being in certain areas, but they completely deny it. I know that for a fact. It's happened right here, hell, within 100 yards of my house. You know, I live right across from Wildlife Refuge. The Wildlife Management Office is... I can see it from a front porch. So, you know, it depends on who you talk to regarding Sasquatch, because if someone were to get proof, as you said, Gene, in a body, I believe they would have to go full legal up everything before they could divulge the information. Because I believe the government's going to come in and take over. Here's something that happened the other night. I posted this. Some of you may have read it. when I went on my when I went on my walk back to my area, I came across odor two different times along this route. It's a 3-mile route. The first time it smelled like just pure nasty rotten feet, wet sweaty feet, shoes. And then further back, probably another 1/2 mile or so, I came across something that smelled like if anyone's ever messed with sewer lines or sewer pipes, old sewer pipes that have the black greasy or grease trap, if you will, it smelled purely of that. And you know, it was an interesting smell. I'm not going to say, yeah, that's definitely a Sasquatch, you know, because it could be anything. So I'm coming back out, and I'm walking out. You know, it's other than the smells, it was kind of a dull night, so I'm not expecting anything. And I'm walking, and all of a sudden I hear the ground slamming. That's what I call it, where they take a log or something, just wham. And I caught it on my audio recorder, but between my walking and the damn bugs, it would really, really, really need to be cleaned up. And you know, it's not definitive, so I don't feel the need to, you know, post it. So I stop and I shine my light. You know, I got my headlamp on. I'm looking. I don't see anything. You know, I'm doing some. I talk to it. You know, I'm like, was that you? You know, and nothing. And then instinctively, I turn around, and there on the other side of the road that I'm on, in the brush, there was a deer. And I found it very, very interesting, because previously, I'd be walking back there, I'd see a deer, I'd stop. When I see eye shine, I walk towards it. I don't even realize I'm doing it till I'm almost to the animal. But I've seen deer before back there, and every time I stop and I'm looking at a deer, something either gets thrown at me, gets hit against a tree, or I've even been hit in the back with a pine cone. There's something going on. Either I really feel like, as you know, I've told you this earlier today, I really feel like I'm interrupting something. Like they're either stalking that deer or watching that deer. There's something going on. Now that's all anecdotal, of course. I'm still heading out. I leave a little bit further, and I see the telltale orangish red eye shine. And the minute when you see this eye shine, you only have about 2, maybe 3 seconds of it, and then it ducks behind a tree. It hides. I don't know if the headlamp hurts its eyes. I'm sure, possibly. I don't know. But it hit, and I'm looking, and I don't see anything. So I clap my hands. Now, anyone who's been out in the woods, especially at night, knows that if it's a normal animal, you'll see the eye shine. They'll look down. They'll look away for a little while. If you make a noise, they'll instantly look right back at you. This thing never did. It was probably about 8 feet off the ground, down in the ravine. Now, that's not proof. In my mind, that's not proof that it was definitely a Sasquatch. It's interesting, but what was really weird was the next day, my girlfriend was driving down this road, and she said she reached a point where she smelled what smelled like pig shit mixed with horse shit. And there's no livestock in this area. There's no horses, there's no cows, there's no pigs. That's fine, that's just a smell. You know, it is interesting because I smelled similar the night before. But what made it even more interesting is she said there was a game warden stopped right there where the smell was.
So, could it have been possibly something that had got run over or something, dead?
freaking?
That's kind of what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that it could possibly have been. It could have even been a Sasquatch that got ran over, got hit. You know, because this is along the highway. You know, they're doing 70 miles an hour. And think about this: if you're an 18-wheeler, a Sasquatch, and Gene and I talked about this today. Something runs ahead of you at a distance where you can actually see what it is. You're not going to hit it. You know, it's gonna make its way across before you get there. But if something jarts right at that very same moment that you're passing, and you bump it or hit it, you're gonna hit it. You're not gonna know what it is. You know, a 18-wheeler, a truck driver is not gonna stop because they're gonna think, oh, it's just a deer. Oh, it was just a bear. They're not going to stop to see what it was.
Yeah.
So, I'm not saying it was a Sasquatch and that it did get hit, you know, because I don't know. It is possible. I'm saying it is interesting that there was a smell and a game warden at the same spot. You know, game warden's not going to stop on the highway. This wasn't even in the refuge. That's the thing. It was on the highway surrounding the refuge. The game warden's not going to stop there for a deer. It's not going to stop there for a coyote that gets hit.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
You know.
Hey, I got a game warden story for you.
Yeah. Okay.
Was you done? I'm sorry. It hit in my brain a story that a guy told me. If it's appropriate to tell it now, and I have his permission to tell it.
Oh,
you
go
talk
ahead.
About game wardens, and actually, at some point, I'm going to have him call in and tell you the story because he's got a very good voice, and he can give you the shivers when he tells it. And it was just out of the blue. I was talking to him about the toys, the action figures, and another guy that was standing by my friend says, "Hey, Bigfoot, you had an experience." And I look at the guy, and he's older. He's 70 years old. And he just kind of smiles, and he don't want to say anything. I mean, he said, "No big deal." And I said, "What?" I said, "You got to tell me." And so I finally got him to tell the story, and it was he was deer hunting in Colorado, and this was, he said, 1977.
Right.
And they were in an area that the ground was a huge plot that was owned or being studied by one of the universities, and it was it was under the guise of clean air research. And to get to where they were hunting deer, there was four guys, they had to go through this area.
Right.
Actually, they were hunting right there by this area. And he thought it was interesting that they needed cameras throughout the area, you know, in the deep woods in 1977 for studying clean air or how. And it might very possibly be, I don't know, but anyway, he thought that was interesting and didn't think nothing of it. But they were all in a Yukon truck, and they were all coming out. And what he said happened was there was a very, very gray, like light gray, about 2 foot taller than a man, but very skinny, that just blasted across the road. And they all are big-time hunters. I mean, they know elk and whatever, you know, everything else, but they said a hairy, gray, tall, very skinny guy blew across the road, and they had to stop because they did almost hit it. And when they stopped, they sat there for a second, and they all talked to each other, you know, did you guys all see what I saw? And, you know, once they talked about it, they hightailed it to the guard shack because you have to show your pass and stuff. It's kind of like when you're at Yellowstone. You have to stop at the guard shack and on your way out. And so they were like, you know, they're ecstatic, and they're telling the guy, here's what happened and everything. And the game warden or the guy there with the badge said, yeah, that sounds about right. And completely just kind of played it off. But you're talking about the game warden. It kind of reminded me of that story because I had never had anybody that I, you know, had known that was older, that had no interest in really ever repeating that story, you know, because it just happens in the course of your life. But it did involve game wardens, and I think it did involve, they knew
totally aware of what was being what was going on, you know, and
yeah,
it would be really
yeah.
cool to coordinate with somebody from that time that was kind of monitoring that area, or to collaborate that thin gray sighting. I just always thought that was cool. But anyway, that story just popped into my head.
It's,
I just wanted to share
it's,
it.
It's funny you mention that. I truly believe that the government knows about it. These game wardens know about it, and that's part of their job, you know. When I first moved to this area, and I've told this story a few times, but I'm gonna tell you guys a little bit more of it. When I first moved to this area, this was before I had any dogs or anything like that. There was something that jumped out of a tree at the edge of my property, and it was really loud. I mean, I could hear it coming down the tree, hitting branches, and it landed. And I went over there the next day. I found the track. This is when I had interactions with the BFRO. They actually came here and investigated. The only thing I saw was a quick, big blur that was coyote colored, but it was on two feet. I saw the back of a head and shoulder and the top of shoulders, and it was the color of coyotes. In fact, it was the color of the Rougarou that Gene just painted. It was that grayish brown type color. So when you say that this guy saw something, something that was gray, what I saw, as I said, I'll tell you what, you remember the image that floated around not too long ago that was supposedly the back of a Sasquatch, and a lot of people
yes,
were like,
the gray one.
It had scar, it had warts, this and that. It
yep.
was, it was very, very similar to that. Very similar to that. I don't know if that picture was real or not. It was interesting.
It wasn't. It wasn't that picture, because they showed the front of it. Like I've seen the front and the back of that particular thing. If it's the same one you're talking about, it's got really pretty gray hair or whatever.
Yeah. And you know, they investigated, it's got scar tissue or something along those lines. But that particular color is similar to what this thing was. And when it hit the ground. When it hit the ground, it was instantly gone down the ravine. And I could take a picture of exactly where it happened. The ravine is right at the edge of my yard. I can stand on my front porch and look across and see it. I had a couple other incidents at that point in time, but since then, since I got my dog, I haven't had any incidents like that. Yesterday, I was outside watering my garden, and there was a wood knock that came from behind my house, which is nothing but woods. It was clear cut about 3 years ago. It's grown up now. I think I would say the tallest is about maybe 16 to 20 foot trees, and a lot of thick underbrush, because, you know, there used to not be all that underbrush, but once they clear cut it, the sunlight was able to get down to those vines and whatnot, and yeah, it got real thick at that point in time. But, I mean, as far as close, no, and I really kind of think that it's because of the dog. That's chained up on my property.
I hear a lot of mixed things about dogs, that they don't like dogs, that they like dogs. I mean, there's a lot of, maybe it boils down to just like the people, you know. Some people get along with animals like dogs and things, and some people don't. Because I hear that sometimes they kill dogs outright, and sometimes they seem to be fine with them, you know.
Yeah, well, my dog, that night that I had the three branch slams going on around me, the tree shaking, the wood knock that I recorded, the howls that I recorded, my dog was with me, and I can tell when something is around by the way he acts, not by his aggressiveness, but by his lack of wandering off, his staying right next to me, his whole demeanor changes. He doesn't whimper. He's different, you know. And I can always tell that, okay, there's something nearby just by that.
Wow.
And I know all dogs are different.
Wow.
But.
Hey, Brian, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Because it just popped into my head. When you got into this fully, was it due to an interest, or was it due to something that happened? Did you have an experience, or what actually drove home, hey, I have to start doing this?
Well, I had my first sighting when I was about 11. That was in Florida, and there was a lot of incidents going on through childhood that, looking back now, back then we didn't know what the hell it was. We just associated with some wild animal. But looking back now, I realized that me and my brothers had a lot more close encounters than we thought. And then in 2007, I had another sighting down on Pearl River around Jackson. I saw this thing going across the field. And then here, I want to say probably 2-3 years ago, I was going down Natchez Trace Parkway and saw something on the side, squatting down. And a few weeks later, my girlfriend was going down Natchez Trace Parkway, and she said she saw something with big, bright red eyes. In fact, I even talked to Bobo about that incident, Bobo from Finding Bigfoot. And she talked to him also. So I got involved with a paranormal group. I'm not going to...
This all happened before you were actively looking. This happened. This stuff happened.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would go, you know,
wow.
Just every once in a while, I would go with the kids. Hey, let's go walk, you know, to the lake. And, just for kicks. You know how you do stupid shit, just, you know, to scare your kids or to get a thrill or whatever. You know, I would do that a lot. And one day, me and myself, well, my girlfriend's daughter, we were back there, and we heard what sounded like very similar to the samurai chatter. And she'll tell you to this day, you know. So there's been a lot of little bitty in house here and there. There's been a lot of little bitty occurrences happening. But I got involved with this paranormal group. I won't name their name. I won't even say where they're from because it'll give it away. And things didn't work out. We had conflict of interest. They were mostly ghosts. I wanted to do the Sasquatch thing and include it. It just didn't work out. So I said, you know what? And I had bad interactions with the BFRO. So I'm like, why am I kissing someone else's ass and doing this? I'm going to go do it myself, you know? Because I've been a firm believer throughout my life that what one man can do, I can do also. You know, if it takes training, no matter what it takes, if one man on this planet can do it, then I could do it as well. Because that man is human just like I am.
Excellent. And I'm glad you are, too.
and so, you know, I said, the hell with it. You know, the hell with all these, you know, ass clowns and whatever. I'm going to go out and I'm going to do it myself. And I did. I made Onyx Nights Paranormal, and it just grew from there to what it is today. And it's getting better every day. And then I started
cool.
Going out there. I went out with my friend Melissa in March, and we, you know, we got that roar, and that was the turning point for me. That was the point that said, I'm going to be out here doing this all the time, every night, as often as I can. That role, I'm telling you, man, if you ever get it, if you ever hear it, if you ever feel it, it will never, ever, ever leave you.
I'm going to tell you something, Brian. I build ponds with my dad, but we run equipment. And it never fails. You know, the deer are so plentiful out in the middle of nowhere. You know, they get used to that sound, and by the time it's shutdown time, the deer are just right there. It just amazes me that they come right up to you. But there was one time, and I don't know what, this could have been a bull or a cow, I don't know, but the closest I've ever come to what the experience you're talking about is it was getting too dark to see, and I had to fuel up, so we're way back. You know, we're 5 miles, you know, from a house in the boonies, in the bottom, and after I shut my stuff off, I'm out and I'm greasing and I'm getting ready to fuel, and we had tore out, I had been tearing out trees that day. I mean, I was having a very big impact on this piece of ground, and what I thought was a bull snorting at me, but it was so bassy that you could kind of feel it. And I had just got off the machine. I'd been running for 8 hours. And it very possibly could have been it's not a bear. We don't have bears too often in Illinois. And it could have been a bull or whatever. But I did kind of hear it wasn't a roar. It basically, to me, if I had to describe it, it was like a big, big chested something saying, ah, I mean, just like they were torqued off.
Yeah.
But it was a deep throaty thing that I've been around cattle. And I've heard a bull make kind of that similar sound, but it was almost like a pissed off, what are you doing? And but make a long story short, I waited till the next morning before I fueled up because I had to get out of there.
Well, you know, this roar, and I've posted a YouTube video. Melissa, she really got into it and really researched and listened to different. She wanted to know what it possibly could be, if it could possibly be something natural. And the closest thing she found was a gorilla, and I posted it several times. And I listened to it, and it sounds close, but this thing was so much louder. If you take that gorilla roar, And you increase the bass. It had bass and it had lows and it had highs all together as one. If
wow,
that makes sense.
The bass is what I remember, but wow.
And you know, shortly thereafter, and I've talked about this before. Shortly thereafter, probably within 20 minutes, we continue walking because, you know, I didn't have the audio going because I figured we're going to get to the deer stand and then we're going to turn it on. But shortly thereafter, we hear what sounds like a coyote just getting ripped apart. I've never in my life heard a coyote sound like that. And
my God,
scared. That was, in my opinion, that was more scary than the actual roar, because if this thing can do this to a coyote, you know, what could it do to us? So another 10, 15 minutes went by, and then we heard the coyotes in that same area just acting normal. So, you know, I'm kind of thinking that this thing got pissed off because we actually walked behind it, and I believe that it was looking out over a grass plot watching these deer. And this is speculation, of course, based on some other testimonies and reports that I've read. I believe that this thing got pissed off because we interrupted its hunt, and it took it out on the first thing it ran into, and that was a coyote.
Oh, man.
You know,
wow, I've never heard a coyote make sounds like that, and we have so many. I mean, if you make any kind of noise, you'd have different groups of coyotes that talk back and forth to each other all night. I mean, there's too many around here. They get in the way, they get run over, they're all over. And
well, here's
never
the thing. If you've ever been around a dog that's got hit by a car, or that's got really seriously hurt, and it's doing that, if you can multiply that by 20, that's what this coyote sound like.
Dang.
Yeah, it was pretty. That was about as scary as the door. But we're up in this deer stand, and you know, we're both in this little deer stand, and my legs are hanging down, and I'm just freaking, you know, this is like the first full-on experience. And I'm thinking something's going to just walk up and grab my legs and rip me down out of it. And, yeah, it was pretty intense. And
wow.
And that just did it for me. And I'm like, you know what? As scary as that was, I've got to know more. You know, I've got to know what it was, why, and how. And so I forced myself. I willingly forced myself, and we're getting on me. And but anyway, I willingly forced myself to get back out there, alone. And I got some roars that I've posted, some distant roars. But these are more like whoa, like that whoa, and that's a sound. That's a sound that they make quite often. The whoa. And in fact, when you were talking about your incident, that's the exact sound that I recorded. That sound when you were talking about.
Oh man, I gotta listen to that.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. So
I'd like to know what it is. And hey, I need to apologize. I forgot all of a sudden here a few minutes ago we were on your show. I thought I was back to just me and you on the phone, so I kind of digressed.
Yeah,
no,
so
I apologize.
It's all right. We got 23 minutes. Got 23 minutes left of airtime, but then we go in the archive. And guys, you know, I'm all for continue talking. I mean, hell, we do it all the time anyway, just talk for hours. So if you guys are willing to, you know, we can get in that. I want to get Gene. You are like an encyclopedia when it comes to Sasquatch, man. I've learned that through our friendship.
Of course, depending on how you look at it.
And that's very valuable to me, as far as you being on the team. And you know, guys, here's what I would like to do while we still got about 25 minutes. I want to take some calls, perhaps. Guys listening, if you want to call in, number is 323-580-5703. That's 323-580-5703. If you have any questions for Gene, for Jeff, for myself, feel free to give us a call, and anything goes, you know, as long as it's pertaining to the subject matter. Go ahead and call in. We're going to go ahead and continue to talk. If we get some calls, and that's awesome. You know, if not, then we're just going to keep on rolling. But you know, when you were saying what you were saying, Jeff, about your particular incident, I'm going to send you that audio. And,
cool.
And you tell me if it sounds eerily similar to what you yourself heard.
And I don't know for sure what I heard. It was could be anything, but I'd love to hear it. Yes.
Yeah, no doubt. I've got it on my SoundCloud. But you know, Gene, up there where you're at, I mean, you got a lot of sightings and reports in that area as well.
Yeah, just Jersey seems to have its sightings tend to be either way north and west, like towards Pennsylvania-ish, or down towards the Pine Barrens. I guess one of our sort of indigenous cryptids that sounds kind of very Sasquatch-ish is called like Old Red Eye, in addition to like the Jersey Devil stuff. But if I'm correct, our version of Sasquatch is Old Red Eye, which dovetails nicely with our Red Eye Sasquatch, by the way.
Do what now? I'm sorry.
No, I just said it. You know, coincidentally, we have a Red Eye Sasquatch, so that could be the Jersey Squatch. He just needs bigger hair.
Yeah. Man, you know, you guys... I mean, what you guys are doing is awesome. I think I love it because it's going to hopefully put these things in the hands of children and get children interested in it. You know, it's like Gene and I, like we were speaking today. Kids nowadays, they stay locked up in the rooms on these video games. There's no real mystery to it, you know, where they're actually getting out there. I'm sorry, it wasn't Gene I was speaking to about that. It was Elliot. It was Elliot from the upcoming, from Swamp Monsters. Yeah, you know, these kids, they stay locked up. Back in our day, well, my day, you know, it was take your butt outside. You know, so you were always making, you were always looking for adventure, and now these kids get through the these video games and you know, I really would like to get as much of this knowledge into their hands as possible, and I think that's what you guys are going to be doing with this Creature Replica line.
From the outset, kind of our idea was in the same way, or in a similar way that all these TV shows are bringing a lot of new people into the subject matter and kind of blowing up the field of interest, we also want to tie the product line into a lot of different resources online, you know, so that we can introduce people to some of the better books out there. I mean, I'd love to be able to turn people on to some of the books that other, that various shows like podcasts that I've been listening to and TV shows and people I've talked to have turned me on to that have sort of really informed me in this field. I mean, I have a few of the people that you know, that there's guys that I talk about when we talk, Brian and Jeff, like all the time. Like I bring up John Cassar all the time. His book for me was a seminal tome that brought me back into this field of interest. Like that was like getting hit by a freaking steamroller for me, reading what he wrote in his Recasting Bigfoot book, and then coming across Kathy Strain's book, and also and then even in the fiction genre, I'm not a big fan of fictional Bigfoot stories because I'm just tired of reading stories about Bigfoot ripping people's arms out of the sockets and all this stuff and Sci-Fi Channel kind of crap. But when I read James Bailey's first book when she put that out, and Eve blew me away, you know, and there's very few fictional books that really grabbed me like that one did. So, you know, we really want to be able to tie in with some of these authors and give them some, you know, kind of pimp their books and have them kind of look at what we're doing and sort of give us sort of a nod of approval. I mean, there's great stuff out there. The problem with, just like with the research in cryptozoology, there's a lot of books that are total bunk, and there's a lot of researchers that are sort of counterproductive to, you know, bringing this thing into the forefront of research. You know, and that's part of the idea behind it. I mean, we're obviously really into this stuff anyway, and we're in a unique position where we can tie our website into all different websites and drop links in a blog or whatever. That's one of the things we've talked about, which I haven't really gotten off my ass actually doing anything about it because of everything else, but we want to actually do a blog that'll kind of tie what we're doing into what actually is going on in the field right now, and just dropping in there, you know what, this is a book that everyone should read. And there's certain ones, there's about half a dozen books at least, that anyone into this should absolutely read. And then, you know, you pick and choose, just like I do. I mean, I've been reading solid most of this stuff in this subject area, particularly Bigfoot and the Yeti, for the last 2 or 3 years almost exclusively, like I was telling you earlier, other than serial killer stuff. And there's great books. And then some of them, you get a few pages in and you're like, this is horseshit. This is a complete waste of time. So I'd love to be able to help people weed through some of that, just like some of the other people in the field have helped me, either directly or just from listening to podcasts and having them kind of point out certain books, like, you know.
Well, I mean, you're part, you guys are part of the team. I mean, I know you're real busy, you know, with the line and everything, but hell, I've told you before, you know, anything you want to post, anything you want to promote, hey, go for it. You know, if you want to speak to people on the site, you know, about these certain books or whatever, knock yourself out. You know, I'm not gonna, you know, I mean, you know me, I'm all for it. You know, I'll promote the hell out of you guys, left and right.
Yeah, one of my big pet peeves is cheesy research. The flip side of that is the idea of the skeptics that are just as unscientific as some of the crazier researchers. You know, as much as I hate when people just sort of blindly follow nutty ideas, but
right.
just as equally, I hate when people completely disregard something or don't even look at any of the plausible evidence without and completely discard it. That's just as unscientific. And that's
the other side of
my major pet peeve in this type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's those that might say what I'm doing is crazy. I mean, I'm not a scientist. You know, I'm going out there, and I'm just being myself, and you know, listening, and I don't do all the hoots and howls and whatnot. I'm just going out there, listening for what I hear. You know, I might talk, you know, occasionally. One thing I started doing was repeating my own name. Because, you know, if I go out there one night and I hear my name called to me and there's no other human out there, I think that kind of tells me, you know, I think that eliminates a lot of things. But, you know, a lot of people would think that I'm crazy. I go out there by myself and I don't carry a gun. But, I mean, realistically, what other way is there to study these things other than to go out there? You know, I don't feel like you need to have a PhD to be able to go out there and understand and interact with these things. You know? Yeah, there are some kooky things that go on that people try. You know, I don't do all that. I just go out there and I'll walk. I might whistle once in a while. I might sing. I try different things just to see what happens. You know, and for the most part, just walking out there quietly and acting like there's nothing there gets the most reaction thus far. Guys, we got a caller. We have a caller on the line. If you guys want, you know, if you don't mind, we'll go ahead and bring them on and talk
Heck
to
yeah.
them.
Sure.
Yeah.
Hello, caller.
Yes.
Hey, who are we speaking?
Hello. This is Craig.
Craig, hey, how are you today?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. Where are you calling from, if you don't mind?
I'm calling from Ohio.
Oh, okay. Well, we appreciate you calling in. You're on the air with Gene St. Gene and Jeff Byers with Creature Replica. Did you have a question for them?
Yeah, I did. I've been following the Creature Replica line since probably, March? You guys kind of came out with it. Really stoked mm-hmm. about it, and followed you through Comic-Con, and I was kind of wondering, you know, I see you're doing, you know, mostly cryptids right now. Are you planning on doing anything outside the cryptid realm?
Hey, Gene,
yeah,
how are you?
Yeah, we've kind of just been going along with whatever kind of strikes us. Basically, after the first wave, we had kind of rethought it from being all kind of relic hominids. The first wave started out with a Sasquatch, a Yeti, an Orang Pendek, mm-hmm. and a Yowie. Then when we decided for various reasons, one including financial, to kind of make the wave a little tighter because we knew we wanted to do the Horror Hound, we kind of varied it a little bit with the two wolf variations. Then we started thinking a little differently and decided to expand into other cryptids. And the way we kind of rationalize some of our other choices is that if you go into old world Europe, things like werewolves and vampires are essentially kind of medieval cryptozoology. People there believed completely that those creatures were real things. Even if you go back into the 1700s and you look at a story like the Beast of Gévaudan, where hundreds of people were basically killed by what they think was either a rogue wolf or a pack of rogue wolves. You look at that story, and at the time, the folk people, peasants who were kind of affected by this in their province, they looked at this as like attacks by some sort of a witch or a werewolf. And in reality, in the 1700s in early Europe, wolf attacks were really prevalent. Thousands of people died every year by predating wolves. And then eventually they basically hunted them to extinction. But at this particular time, that statistic obviously, because publishing wasn't what it is today, knowledge didn't spread as quickly. They had no idea that logically this could just be sort of a natural phenomenon. But these wolves were basically attacking all the women and children that would be out in the field watching over the flocks, and some of them got even bold enough where they would go right into the center of town and snatch a kid right off the street. And so if you look at things like that, basically that's the same type of folklore-ish, well, that was a real story. It just, it was built up in certain directions as more of a folkloric thing. So we're, to get back to your original question, we're looking at things like that as also like correlated information that is also another branch of cryptozoology, which is folklore from other cultures across the world. So we're basically, our lines are going to span cryptozoology, folklore, mythology. A werewolf could pop up in a line just as easy as, say, a cyclops or a medusa or a vampire or a zombie. It'll just depend on what we feel like at a particular time, kind of how the line kind of vibes for us. Right now we have about 4 lines planned out roughly. We need a list of about 20 characters. And the vast majority of them are cryptic. But depending on what we feel like here and there, we may throw some other things in. You know, like I said, where the line started, it's in a completely different place from our original concept. And as you can see, wave 2, the first creature we announced is an alien gray. So already we're in a different, slightly different ballpark than like a Sasquatch. So, short answer, cool. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I can't wait to see what you guys have coming out. I'm excited.
Awesome.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
Okay, well, thank you for calling in. We appreciate it, Greg.
Yep.
You have a good night.
Thanks, man.
Guys, we have another caller calling in. We'll go ahead and switch over to them if you guys are ready.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fired up.
Hello, caller. You're on the air. Who am I speaking with?
This is Elliot Guidry.
Elliot. Hey, guys. This is Elliot from the upcoming Swamp Monsters series.
Oh, my guy.
Well, hey, what's going on, guys?
Not much, man.
We're good,
yeah,
man.
Just,
how are you?
Giving y'all a call and, you know, just kind of giving y'all props for y'all... Y'all little action figures, man. I see you got one of Louisiana Rougarou, and that's one creature that I've studied for a couple of years, and it's a great depiction of it.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, we've been kicking that one around since the very beginning, and one of my pet peeves. I tend to have a lot of pet peeves, a lot of things, but one of them as far as like movies and toys is depictions of werewolves I always find incredibly disappointing. Like, I don't think there's ever been a decent looking werewolf toy that I've really liked.
Right.
And, so this is my opportunity to make sure something like that happens. Of course, I have a horse in the race because it's my sculpt, so, but up to this point, I've never really seen anything that was worth what it was supposed to be, you know. So I'm happy that someone who's into the research like you are kind of digs it too, because that makes me feel like we're definitely on the right track then.
Yeah, I just wanted to call in and give you all props. I mean, I didn't want to, you know, take up any of the show. I know, you know, I know y'all got a lot of callers coming in. I just wanted to call in and give my support to Brian and,
well, I appreciate,
you know,
it, bud.
Tell everybody hello and, you know,
Elliot's
going to
be
talking to y'all soon.
Yeah, Elliot's going to be on next week's show with me.
Good deal,
guys.
We'll definitely be listening.
That's a little reveal. Elliot is with Destination America's new show, Swamp Monsters, and I'm going to have him on the air next week, and his show is premiering next Friday. Correct, Elliot?
Yes, premieres August 22nd at 9 o'clock Eastern and Pacific, 8 o'clock Central, and... it's about swamp monsters. We are a group of Cajun guys that are going out into the swamp and trying to do some research and tackle these cryptids that are in our swamp. And I thought that y'all did a great job of depicting the Louisiana Rougarou. And it's something that all of the people from Louisiana have heard legends and stories of. And we got a lot of interesting stuff to share with everybody next week. So hopefully they stay tuned for it.
Awesome. So do you guys hunt Paramount Fair? How do you say it? Paramount Fair Bay? It's another swamp critter.
I didn't catch it.
It's kind of like a, it's kind of like a swamp thing type creature. I remember seeing it talked about on a show I saw in the 70s.
Well, the three that we actually tackle are the Grunch. That'll be our premiere episode. We do the Honey Island Swamp Monster and Rougarou.
I am stoked. I'm really looking forward to this.
Wow.
Well, I'll let y'all get back to the show, and thank y'all for putting that out there. And good luck, fellas.
Thank you for calling in, Elliot. It was a great surprise.
Elliot, thank you. It was awesome. I'd love to talk to you about the Rougarou and hear everything. I'm going to call in next week.
Hey, call in, man. I'd be happy to talk to you.
Yeah,
awesome.
We've got it all lined up. It's good to go. He's going to be on next week with us.
All right, sounds good, man. Hope to hear from y'all soon.
All right, Elliot, all right, take care. I'll give you a holler soon.
Thank you.
All right,
thank you.
Take care, Elliot.
How awesome was that, guys?
Holy cow.
And I did not ask him to call in. I swear to God, I did not. I did not ask him to call in.
Not very cool.
That, I'm kind of speechless.
I told you, hey, I told you, I make shit happen, buddy, you know?
you do. You know what? I would be totally ashamed to admit to him that the first time I heard the term Rougarou was when I was watching Scooby-Doo. I think on Scooby-Doo they called it the Loop-Garou, because I think that's one, or that's where Rougarou comes from. But,
you know, it's funny because that's the first time I ever. Well, I take that back. I was born and raised down in South Louisiana, and my grandparents would tell us stories. So, but yeah, I do know what you're talking about with the Scooby-Doo episode. Gene, I've got to ask you a question, buddy. I'm looking here at the images that you guys sent me of the Rougarou, and I have Are the jaws can the mouth be opened?
Yeah, it has. There's a kind of a hinge in there on that original prototype. I had knocked that thing together so friggin' fast that I just kind of glued it in place. But the actual action figure, the jaw, you'll be able to open it.
Oh
so
my
it has
god!
A little more
expression
than
just,
the other one.
I think I just wet
the ears. Are the ears movable too, Gene?
Yeah, that was one of the other things. The ears are actually kind of on a little pop-in ball socket. So that
no way.
In order to get even a little more expression, you know how like when a wolf snarls, the lips curl up over the gums, and then the ears flatten down on the head, kind of like a cat.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll be able to do that too, for a little more expression. You'll be able to turn the ears in that socket and flatten them down like a wolf when they snarl.
Holy shit, man, I was in love with this thing before, and now it's just got, like, 10 times better. Guys, we got 90 seconds left. We got 90 seconds left of airtime. We're going to continue talking. You guys can catch us in the archives. I want to take this time to thank Gene and Jeff for coming on. They're real good friends of mine. They're part of my paranormal team, and I'm honored to have you guys on board. And for all you guys listening, I really, really appreciate it. Tune in next week with us. It's going to be Elliot Guidry with the upcoming series Swamp Monsters. It's going to be an awesome, awesome, awesome broadcast. Once again, thank you guys tuning in. We appreciate it so much. We're going to keep this ball rolling, and you guys will be able to listen tomorrow. I'll post it, and you guys can listen to the rest of it in the archives. And I apologize that it is that way, but that's the way it happens. So thanks again. Y'all have a good night. Take care.
Appreciate it, bro.
Yeah. Gene, man.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm looking at, you know, I didn't know that it had any of those articulation.
Yeah,
you know,
well,
I just,
so that it wouldn't be apparent.
You did a damn good job of hiding it, buddy. You know, I'm looking at the image, and you know, when we were talking with Elliot, I was looking at it, and I'm like, wait a minute, that mouth looks like it might be able to be opened.
Mm-hmm.
But I did not expect, and that's the first time I believe that's ever, the ears, I would have never expected that.
Yeah, it was sort of a last-minute decision, like, while I was looking at it, because when I was working on the werewolf, I pulled up a lot of pictures of wolves, and I wanted to be able to capture some of that snarl. You know, I mean, obviously, it's not a total wolf. There's kind of a hybrid-y kind of feel, but every picture that I pulled up of a wolf with, like, in full snarl with the lips pulled back, the ears go down at the same time. Like I said, you know, wolves and dogs and cats kind of have that type of thing, so I didn't want to pigeonhole it into one or the other, so it's a pretty easy solution to just, you know, I put a couple of sockets in the top of the head and then just kind of made the little hair tufts stick up so that from any of the views from the side, you couldn't really see that there was an aperture there. And then the ears just pop right in on the simple ball and socket. So, I mean, you know, there won't be a ton of movement, but you'll be able to turn them and flatten them down a little bit. It'll really add to the amount of expression that you can get out of that head.
And it comes with a shirt that's removable as well, right?
Yeah, the shirt pieces, like around his, over his shoulder and around his wrist, those are just going to be kind of like pressure fit pieces. So if you just want to have your basic, you know, running through the wolf sky clad, you just pull those pieces right off. They're not going to be glued on or anything.
Dude, it's that attention to detail that makes you a god in this field. I'm serious, man. I'm serious, you know. I'm stoked to be a part of this, and I'm stoked to be, you know, to be considered a friend. Man, you're awesome. You know, I do some sculpting too, but you know, I've told Jeff when we've talked, I said, man, I would love to just go visit Gene and just watch him for one whole day. You know. If I could watch you for more than one day, I'd be thrilled. But, yeah, I'll be happy with just one whole day. Just watch you.
Well, I had a few years ago.
No,
that
didn't sound. That
was doing
that
a lot of
sound,
that stuff.
That didn't sound stalkerish at all.
Yeah, nice
day. Can I watch you take a shower? You got a pretty mouth.
We a lot of pink boy.
Yeah. God. No, that's totally not what I meant.
What just happened there?
Yeah, watch you do your work. Watch your skull.
We've just turned this into an R-rated show.
I'm telling you. I'm telling you, man.
That'll be a little extra surprise for the people that listen to the archive show. Can we sculpt the Ned Beatty?
Man.
Exactly.
Hey, guys, I'm telling you, it was an awesome show tonight. I don't know about you guys, but, yeah, it was awesome. And, I want you guys know you're more than welcome to come on anytime, and I definitely want to get you back on. I know that
I've been panicking, dude, for a week. I've been panicking. You know, it's like, okay, you had Lyle Blackburn on, you had Trapper and Jeff, you had J.M. Bate. You know, it's like trying to follow the good comedian on the talk show. I mean, it's like, how you follow that up? You know,
dude, it's me.
I've had a good time.
You know, even Trapper was, I mean, he liked being on this show because he was able to relax, just be himself and have, I mean, you guys heard it, the episode. And, you know, I was talking with Elliot today and he was like you, he was nervous, you know, about the show next week. And I said, it's not like that. I don't structure this shit. You know, I want it to be like us just sitting around a campfire talking, you know. I don't structure it. I told him it's very laid back, man. It's you know, and I didn't know he'd be listening tonight, and I'm glad he did because he was able to see what the show was like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for him to for him to call in, I totally did not expect that. And I hope he doesn't get in any kind of trouble with his publicist, because they're real, you know, they're real funny about things like that. But, you know, he's going to be on the show next, so I'm sure it'll be fine, you know.
Yeah,
but yeah,
cool.
He, I mean, you know, if his show takes off, well, we talked in private about that. I'm not going to talk about it on the air. But, yeah, you know, I mean, he just gave you guys mad props. And he is very interested in this line of action figures, particularly the Rougarou.
Cool.
You know, he told me already when it comes out, he's getting it. He's going to carry it around to conventions with him.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so yeah, there's that
avenue. I think this field of interest has never been bigger, I don't think, since probably the 70s when I was a kid. You know, because it kind of went into gestation for like decades. You know, I mean, there was little bumps here and there, like during the 80s, What are you talking about?
The whole
cryptozoology and Bigfoot in general. It just sort of dropped off the map for decades. It was one of the biggest things when I was a kid. That's why I got into it. It was everywhere. And
Harry and the Hendersons came out in the 80s, and while that was an awesome movie, I think it kind of put more of a comical side in a lot of people's minds, you know, and led them to think, you know. And then in the 80s, you had all these people coming out claiming they were Patty in the Patterson Gimlin film, and you know. But I mean, there's I would love to accredit, because I remember there was a couple of Bigfoot shows on, and then Monster Quest.
Stacy Keach
got the ball rolling, and I love that show. I wish it was still on the air. That narrator, his voice, when you heard
Stacy
that voice,
Keach.
Yeah, was it Stacy Keach?
I believe it was.
I don't think so. I think it was someone else.
Look it up, man. I think.
Yeah, but his voice, man. When you heard that voice. I mean, he set the whole mood for that show.
Yeah.
I love that show. I recorded every episode, and I really feel like that's what got the ball rolling again. You know,
yeah,
and
it was
then,
that, and then there was a whole barrage of stuff. Also, Destination Truth I liked a lot, too.
Yeah,
I like that,
Josh
that
Gates.
Josh Gates guy is funny as hell.
Yeah, I would love to get him on.
One of the things I still don't understand about all of these shows is why do they always go out at night? Obviously it's because everything looks cooler through, like, a thermal cam. But to go out in the middle of the night, you're, like, upping the danger of just falling and breaking your leg, like, 100 times. It just seems that they varied it up so that you'd have some daylight stuff where you could actually see the actual area they're in and stuff. Sometimes it gets a little too ghost hunter for me, all these shows. You know, I hate those hunting shows, but if they varied up the location, kind of the time frames of them a little bit, I think it'd be have a little more interest. But what I really liked about Monster Quest and some of the similar things is they would go into the folklore and then they do their recreation stuff, and then they do those kind of cheesy CGI like monster renditions, and it was just a nice kind of mix of different approaches, you know.
Yeah.
And now everything tends to have more of the kind of in the field, like Blair Witch kind of vibe to it, you know. Which seems to be the flavor of the month.
Yeah, yeah, the whole. Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. You know, and Les Stroud, you know, we spoke about him earlier and about him coming on the show. He is going to be doing. It's been, you know, he's said it's been confirmed. He's going to be doing more Bigfoot research type shows. You know, he had the one with that guy. I'm not going to say any names.
Let's leave that part of it there.
Yeah, with that guy. But you know, he's gonna continue it. He's gonna continue into this field, mm-hmm. and I think that's awesome because, I mean, you guys know I go out there by myself, and you know, I think that lends better chances to actually getting some activity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, because the Sasquatch is bigger than us, and yeah, it could probably kick 10 guys' asses. But I really feel that the more people you have out there, the more intimidated it's going to feel.
Yeah.
You know, unless you do it like we're planning on doing when we go to Boggy Creek, we're gonna completely split up. You know, we're gonna have one group of two or three people at one end, one group somewhere else, and then another group even further. You know, so we're all gonna be separated by miles. We won't even be able to hear each other. So,
wow.
You know, that's how we're gonna do that. And man, you know, I wish you guys could come too. I really did. I'm sure that the other guys would love it. And I wish you guys would. That's going to be the 1st of October. From October 1st to October 5th, we're going to be out there.
Hmm.
And I mean, if you guys think you can make it, definitely let me know. Because
I'd like to do it at some point. Logistically, it's always a pain in the ass for me to get away. I mean, the problem I have with October is New York Comic Con falls around the 9th, I think. So I'm going to be going insane for the 2 weeks before that.
Yeah,
definitely.
You
I'm
suck.
Already kind of,
yeah, you
know.
Suck. We know. You get to go to all the conventions. You suck.
Wow.
You have it so bad. Wow.
I know. I feel bad complaining about going to these shows. It's just the lead up to the shows is such a pain in the ass. I end up like the
well,
final
you
week,
know,
I
when
end up
you said,
doing like a 40-hour stretch without sleep. That's
when you,
the part
when
I hate.
You, well, that's kind of leaning towards where I was going. When you said that October was kind of bad for you, first thing that popped in my head is what? You got to start putting your vampire makeup on for Halloween?
I wear that all the time.
I knew that was coming.
That's why you only hear me on radio shows at night or when I'm on in my house talking to you out of my crypt from my cell phone.
I feel bad. Hey, dude, seriously, man, because I feel bad sometimes, you know, when I have to call you during the day because I know how busy you are and I know that you work late night. And I'm like, man, I hope I'm not bothering them. That's why I always ask, you know, when I call, are you busy? Are you doing anything? You got a minute? Because I don't want to,
I'm working
you know,
all the time, dude. I've
yeah,
been working the whole time we've been talking on the show.
Oh, I totally believe you. Believe it. I have too, to be honest with you.
Working now.
But, you know, I don't, the main thing is, I mean, you guys, I don't want to be a pain in the ass to anybody. You know, I don't want to bother anybody. You know, I consider you guys friends, and, you know, when we talk, I mean, hell, we talk for hours. But at the same time, I know that, Gene, you've got everything going on with what you're doing, and Jeff, you've got your business as well.
It's but, fun though. You gotta set time aside to have fun. I mean, and this radio show, I ran outside after my phone was having problems there, so I haven't been by my computer or anything. But I've been looking forward to this. I've been nervous, but looking forward to it. You know.
Oh man, so you haven't seen the midget porn that I sent you?
No, dang it. I gotta go. Okay, there's about 7 things I want to say, but I probably shouldn't.
Yeah. I probably shouldn't have said that either. But
no, it's crazy that you said midgets because I was just today I was looking up some stuff. Well,
and we do not. Let me make this disclaimer: we do not discriminate against midgets.
Oh, I know. I'm just. No,
I think you're discriminating against them just using the term midget, but that's. Maybe I'm splitting hairs.
Okay.
I better shut up. I was doing some.
I don't know what to say to that.
I'm trying to change the subject, man.
Yeah.
Never mind.
God. Oh, man. Guys, you know...
You know, say we were talking about Homo florentiensis, the Hobbit.
What now?
That's the scientific zoology.
I can't hardly hear you, Gene.
Yeah, neither can I.
Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Maybe I was just mumbling.
It sounded like he said he loved hobbits.
No, I was just saying the midget section of the show could have been an allusion to Homo florentiensis, the hobbit they found.
It could have been.
Yeah,
miniature
skeleton.
We'll let you listener think on that one.
There you
go. What hint might have been there?
Mm-hmm.
You know. Hey, I got to ask you a question now. Now, the Rougarou, it has the mouth open and closes and the ears. Does the horror hound do the same thing?
No.
No.
His head is all one piece.
I got you.
The hair in the back is kind of separated for a soft PVC, so it won't impede the neck articulation. But his mouth is sculpted closed. The Rougarou, that was just kind of an idea that I had. And then it took me a long time to get the teeth so that when you close the mouth, they fit together exactly. And
that's what I'm looking at on the pictures.
Because I didn't want to put a open and closing mouth where it looked like crap both ways, and the jaw kind of jutted forward. So that'll be one of the things where we'll have to do a decent amount of follow up at the factory to make sure that they maintain that. Because I can kind of anticipate some issues they're going to have with that interfering with the neck ball joint. But I kind of have a workaround, you know. But, so that's kind of my issue is if the mouth was going to open, I wanted the teeth to close and fit exactly together. And then, obviously, if the mouth opens, there has to be a certain amount of interesting stuff inside the mouth, tongue, whatever. So, yeah, it's also a way to bring something slightly different into each creature. Right now, they all have fairly consistent articulation. But, you know, at the Sasquatch, I just couldn't make that torso look the way we wanted it to and maintain that rib cut, so I dropped it all together. And then on the Rougarou...
Even if you did kind of like an overhang...
Yeah, that's what I did on the other ones. It just
that's what you did. I'm looking at the Rougarou's waistline, and that's kind of what you did right there.
Yeah, but it wouldn't have been easy to do that with the that kind of blocky torso we really wanted on the Sasquatch. So, you know, so
right.
Some things, not all the characters are going to have the exact same articulation set up. And the Rougarou has a lot more articulation because all the points on the leg move, and he also has not just a turn in the wrist, but he also has a hinge in the wrist, which is more articulation as well. So depending on the characters, they'll have different features.
You know? I'm drooling. Yeah, I'm drooling.
We were pretty constrained on the horror hound because you had to please the owners and you had to please the actual artist, who, which was really hard, but Gene nailed it. I mean, everybody that was supposedly... really, you know, oh, you'll never please him, we'll never get this right. Just right off the bat, everybody was like, boom, out of the ballpark. I mean, Gene just nailed it right off the bat.
Definitely.
I think there was like one change or something, wasn't there, Gene? Just one small thing or something?
Yeah, they had a few tweaks they wanted to do to the head. So the first version of the head that we showed is slightly different. It isn't anything anyone else has barely even noticed, but... there was a few things they wanted to do, so I just kind of reworked the head and remolded it. So it tweaked
and
are we
still talking about the Rougarou?
Oh, no, we were just talking about the horror hound.
Oh,
the
I got
Rougarou
you.
Was something me and Jeff kind of hashed out together, so we didn't give a crap what anybody else thought. It's just us two. So there were only two people had to like it, and we were already on board. So, but, yeah, you know.
I tell you what, I love it. I'm sitting here drooling in anticipation, especially now that I know that that mouth opens and closes so perfectly, and those ears lay back. Dude, that was genius.
Yeah, it's kind of a neat little feature. I'm psyched that I've followed through on it. Because, of course, you know, everything you do takes you more time to get the thing done. And that one in particular, I was still shredding away to get that friggin' thing done for, when was it? I think I finished that up finally because we wanted to get it into a sales meeting for Diamond. And I got the rest of the sculpt done, molded and casted it, and painted it, finished it all off within the last few days before this friggin' meeting. And there's always the temptation to say, you know what, screw the ear thing or whatever, it'll just take me more time, but I just kind of just pushed through and did it. So I think it'll be definitely worth the extra effort, you know. And then, and also, you know, we're really into werewolves. And there's a lot of different werewolf stuff we're going to do. I already have another head sitting on my desk for another totally different version of a lycanthrope that nobody's going to see probably for a long time because we don't want to – we've already done two wolves in the first line. So this guy's going to have to kick back for a while. But I'm only designing stuff that's like two or three waves down the road.
My lips are sealed. I have an idea, but I'm not saying anything. My lips are sealed, and I hope it's what I'm thinking on. You know, the Yeti. If you remember right, on one of the previous broadcasts that you were on, I asked you about the Yeti's mouth open and closing.
That's kind of deceptive because his mouth is sculpted open, but because of the way I had to mold it, the lower jaw is actually a separate piece for molding. So that'll be a piece that glues in, but it just so happens on the prototype, the seam is kind of crappy. It's kind of exposed. It won't be that apparent in the final thing, but yeah, it's sculpted in an open position, but I had to separate it for molding because you can't mold that all as one piece, and sort of also in anticipation of what they're going to have to do with the factory. You know, I like to make the technical breakdowns myself, so then I know what to expect when the factory deals with it there. So if they run into an issue, I can kind of head it off at the pass because I've already thought it through. But, yeah, I briefly thought about having an open and closing mouth. But, like I said, I don't want to have the same features on everything. I want to kind of change things around, like even in terms of some of the articulation choices. Like on the Yeti, he has a hinged elbow, but his elbow also rotates on a ball socket so that there's actually a ball joint inside his forearm so you can rotate. You can swing the arms out laterally from the elbow as well.
So it's like
a little different than some of the other creatures.
Right, and for those who don't know, basically he's saying that the Yeti can cross his arms across his body. That's what that allows.
Somebody. His chest is pretty big to maybe do it completely, but, you know.
Right.
So there's areas where I'm leaning more towards the articulation being slightly more important and areas where the aesthetic is more important, you know, and it's totally a subjective kind of viewpoint from what we want to see. You know, there will be things where you'll look at a figure and be like, wow, I wish this part moved more. But it's something we had to say, look, do we want it to be that weird looking for articulation, or what's the more important aspect? Like, you know, I don't believe like the Yeti or the Sasquatch needs to crouch down on a branch like Spider-Man would, you know, so there's no need for like a double knee to get that kind of movement. But on another creature, a skinnier, lankier creature might need that type of a feature so that you can squash him right down to get into that pose where he's squatted down like Spider-Man, where his knees are completely, you know, folded up, you know. But it's just kind of a case-by-case basis of what makes sense to us. And if we get into things with different anatomical aspects like wings or fins and things, then there will be more opportunities to play around with, well, how would those move? Are we going to do folding kind of hinging things or multiple kind of pop-in sockets or ball joints. There's a lot of really neat things, you know.
And, you know, you can always at a later, if you decide, like the Sasquatch, for instance, if you decide to give it double knees, you can always, later on, you know, you can always do a different version like that for the squatting down purposes. You know, I'm looking at the red Sasquatch right now, and where the Yeti has a hinge on its shoulder bicep area and the elbow. The the red Sasquatch, from what I can tell, only has the shoulder bicep. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's a ball joint where the bicep, well, not a ball joint, but there's a turn joint where the bicep meets the shoulder ball, and then the elbow is just a standard elbow hinge.
Yeah.
Whereas the
yeah.
Sasquatch kind of has this semi-hidden ball joint, so there's a little more movement in the arms for the Yeti than the Sasquatch. But again, I mean, these aren't creatures that are going to be, you know, kind of leaping and frolicking. They're kind of plodding along. As much as you hear the stuff about how fast they can move, I don't really see them as being animals that you're going to pose like they're sprinting necessarily, you know. They're kind of more hulking monsters, so you want to put them in sort of a cool pose, but just sort of menacing. As we get into some scrawnier kind of creatures, we'll do a lot more with much more extensive articulation that has a wider range of motion. You know, like I said, it's a case-by-case basis.
And there's one particular version of a Sasquatch that's kind of skinny that I'm anxious for. I'm sorry, what?
Would that be the Falk monster?
Yes, sir, the Legend of Boggy Creek. you did the model. I am dying for an action figure based off of that.
That was the first Sasquatch thing I ever worked on with Lyle Blackburn. So I had met him through Facebook because I had just read his book, and I was like, you know what the hell? Let me look for this cat on Facebook. And I found him on there and talked to him a couple of times. It turned out he's like a monster freak like I am. He has like a museum in his house and stuff. And we rapped and stuff, and I was looking at his pictures of his museum, and he's got a ton of my toys in his house. I was like, you know what, dude, I did that figure, I did that, I did that. So like a little while later, he dropped me a line on Facebook, and he's like, what do you think about working on some merch for me to tie into my book? And I was like, yeah, I'd love to. So we kind of hashed out what we'd like to see from the Boggy Creek Monster, and he was like, you know, the cool thing would be is you just took the silhouette off the Ralph McQuarrie painting and then match the silhouette, and because there's no detail in the silhouette, you can pretty much kind of design the creature as long as you stick within it. So that's what we kind of did. So, you know, I kind of threw some ideas at him and said, you know, I think maybe the face could have elements of like a howler monkey and have his mouth open like he's making that scream you hear in the movie, and he should be more wiry and lanky and just nappy and kind of long-haired like you hear a lot about the Southern Sasquatches. So,
yeah, like you and I are built.
Yeah, exactly. So I started sending him just kind of preliminary anatomy sculpts and stuff like that, and then built on it from there. And then it was cool working on it with him. It was a lot of fun. And then
I think you nailed it, man. When I saw it before even looking at the, you know, the title, I knew exactly what it was. You know, I mean, I looked at it and I'm like, I'm sorry, guys. I yawned. I apologize. I, not because you guys are boring, but I've been up for work. But, you know, I looked at the picture and I knew exactly what it was right away. You nailed it. That is exactly what
I was. It was balls on. It was balls on perfect. I couldn't believe it. That's right about the same time I met Gene.
Yeah, we started talking like I think maybe right after I finished that up, and because I was working on it for a really long time, like an embarrassingly long time, and kind of doing it in between other jobs and stuff. And then I finally finished it up and sent it to him. And not too long after that, me and Jeff got introduced, and we started talking about all this stuff. And one of my friends had told him he was looking for somebody to do this, and I was like, man, you don't have to tell me anymore. Just give the guy my number or give me his number. I'm already in. You had me at Bigfoot, so let me just talk to the guy and hash out whatever the particulars are he's looking to do, because I'm definitely into it.
Right on.
And it was weird. It was a weird synchronicity, man. It was like all of a sudden all this crypto stuff started falling into place, and my whole sculpting career has kind of been like that. It's just been one thing after another has just kind of lined up and fallen in like a peg into a board. And right after that thing with that I did for Lyle's book, then I met up with Jeff, and then it was just kind of high speed on ice, you know, because once he had the idea and the backing to carry the thing further than I could do it, you know, logistically, and I took over completely like the creative end of it, doing the sculpting and stuff, then I just went and I chased down every contact I had and see who would get on board to help us with the parts of it that we would need as far as distribution and all the retailers that I know and everything like that, you know. Plus, I've been sort of creeping around the edges of the community anyway. Like, I tend to be more of a lurker than anything else in some of the pages I belong to, but...
Oh, now who's sounding stalkerish?
Yeah. And then once, you know, of course, once we announced the line, then all of a sudden everyone kind of jumped on, and then, you know, the interest has been amazing. I can't even remember how many shows I've been on since we announced in March. You know, we've done a couple things. Me and Jeff have done a few shows together, and then there's been a whole bunch of other stuff that just kind of popped out of the woodwork, you know.
Well, man, I love what you do. I love you guys. You guys are great, man. You're great friends. I appreciate, you know, the friendship more than anything else, the family feeling that comes along with it. It was a true honor for me when you were at San Diego Comic-Con. Jeff sent me the very first images of the Rougarou, and gave me, you know, told me I could show it before anyone else, and you know, that meant a lot to me right there, buddy. I'll tell you that much. You know,
well, you've worked so hard, like kind of pushing the stuff on your end of things, you know, and keeping the getting people interested and getting the word out.
Well, you guys know everything I've been doing. The listeners, of course, don't, but I mean, you guys know. I just believe in this. I believe in this so much, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, but hopefully in the future, anything that's coming out, our listeners can hear it or see it here more so than anywhere else. I mean, you guys are part of the team. You guys have free access to post whatever you want over on the site, you know?
Awesome.
So use it.
And what we're going to start doing, too, the other thing we're going to start doing, too, which we can kind of throw your way, some exclusive kind of stuff, is we're going to do, again, you know, it's sort of me getting off my ass and finding the time to put some of it together and send it to Jeff so he can organize some of it. But in addition to kind of the blog thing we want to do, kind of delving into cryptozoology here and there, we want to do kind of like process blogs on some of the things so that you'll get to see some of the sculpts in their initial form, like in their super rough form. And then as the stuff develops over time through the finished sculpt and into the molding and into the painting and stuff.
Right, like some of the private images you've sent to me, yeah.
Yeah, because I used to do a lot of that stuff for Diamond when I was developing, like, Universal Monsters and the Monsters and stuff.
Right.
So things like that, people are really into seeing sort of how the thing comes to kind of its final form. So we're going to do a lot of that stuff too, because, you know, as it is,
I remember Toy Fair Magazine used to do a lot of that. They used to show a lot of that from concept to
final.
Yeah,
I was in one or two of those way back for when I was at McFarlane in Toy Fair magazine. Actually, my Darkness was on the cover of Toy Fair magazine at one point.
I used to have that one. I remember that. I miss that magazine. But now with the internet, you know, it kind of killed it.
Well, that's it. You know, it's just there's not too many of them left. Probably one of the best magazines out there is Horror Hound. And not just because they're friends of mine, but if you've ever actually picked the magazine up, it's soup to nuts coolness. Just DVDs and masks and toys and anything you could possibly think of that you're into in terms of a horror. In terms of horror, any kind
I'm
of weird
to,
ass little
to,
niche, they cover everything.
I'm gonna have to look for. Do they market it through like Books a Million or?
I know that they used to Barnes and Noble and what's their name? The other one that crapped out, Borders used to carry it.
Walden.
Whichever bookstores are left. I don't know what brick-and-mortar stores are actually even left. But, you know, barring that, you can get it through their website. You can even, because I think it was like issue number one or two, I was in, they interviewed me. It was like right when I started my own studio. So I have an interview in issue one or issue two, and then one of the issues, I wrote an article on the return of vampires to the Marvel Universe. And it was about, I wrote it around the time that I did my Tomb of Dracula statue for Diamond, for Marvel. And it was about, you know, how the Comics Code excluded vampires from the Marvel Universe. You weren't allowed to have them in comics. And then
back in the old days, that's all you could find was horror comics.
Yeah. And then the Comics Code made it so you couldn't have vampires or zombies in comics. And with Tomb of Dracula, they brought, you know, vampires back into the Marvel Universe. So that was kind of the article. So I've kind of dropped in here and there in that magazine, written little snippets here and there. And I think I've had a couple of features in there on my work, like on the Munsters and things. I've known those guys since they used to be at Tomart's Action Figure Digest back when I worked at McFarlane. And that's when I met Nate and Aaron, who run that magazine. And we've been friends since then. So this whole thing with the Horror Hound now was just sort of a logical progression, you know, because I've done stuff with those guys forever, and they've always backed me up to the nth degree, like giving me press in their magazine. They've always been awesome. And just aside from that, the products that they have is a great magazine, and they've spun that into like a really great convention too, you know. So it's something that's kind of a dying art, having a really good magazine that has really nice quality and a broad array of topics within that genre, and then an associated convention that's become really popular, one of the bigger ones in the country now as far as horror cons.
I'm definitely going to have to.
I was just going to say that the convention, the first one we went to, the Walking Dead cast was there, and there was 30,000 people came through there. I mean, what a great place that you can go, and these people from all of your favorite horror movies. I mean, they're there. You can actually interact with these people or get your picture taken with them or. You know, you don't have that chance, you know, in the middle of America. You know, you go out to the coast and there's a chance to see people. But that, you know, and with all the product and all the different things they have going on during Horror Hound Weekend, I mean, anybody listening to this, I would encourage them to go to one because they're awesome.
Well,
yeah,
I hope
true.
To.
They're,
I mean,
and they're focused in the Midwest, too.
Big
stuff tends to be out towards New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and then on the other side of the country out in L.A. and San Diego and stuff. So,
well, you know, with the Skooka movie coming out next month, and then, you know, me being in the sequel in April, I'm hoping to, at that point in time, to be able to travel to these locations like I want to, and, you know, hopefully by then the team will be even better, and we'll be able to travel all together to these conventions and such.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely makes sense. When you've got some kind of movie product, you definitely want to go to the shows and kind of pimp it out there.
Well, by then, my prediction by then is that Creature Replica is going to be on a very high note and be rolling. And
I want to be a Bigfoot millionaire by then.
Yeah, I'm sorry, what was that?
I want to be a Bigfoot millionaire by then.
You're not gonna find them sitting at home, buddy.
That's for sure.
You know, that's why you gotta get your butt out there, get down here. You know, both of you. You know, I'd love to take you guys out there. It'd be awesome.
You will talk to us after you're a movie star, though. Once you've been in the movies.
Oh, come on now, bullshit. I think you know me. I think you know me better than that.
I'm kidding.
No,
that's got to be awesome. The fact that you're gonna—that's like a high point thing right there. You get to play feature in a movie. How dang cool is that?
Yeah, it's a blessing, man. I'm telling you, it's. I mean, my life has really taken off for positive ever since I started doing this, and what really means something to me is that it's me. You know, I'm not. It's me. I'm not really doing anything that anyone else can't do. You know, I'm just being myself, and that for the first time in my life, I really feel like I can be myself and be accepted for that. If that makes sense.
No, you know, perfect
and, sense. And it's awesome. You know, I look at it like things are only going to get better. And, you know, you mentioned with the movie. I mean, you guys know me by now that I'm gonna try to take everyone with me. You know, to where everything I do benefits everyone who's involved. You know, I'm not a selfish person at all, and you know, I'm gonna try my best to help anyone who wants to help or needs to help.
Awesome.
And you know, I mean, hell, that includes you guys. You know, getting some kind of tie-ins with these movies. You know, hell, that's what it's all about. Everybody helping each other. You know, together we have better chances of success. Then separate, if that makes sense to you.
I believe that.
Especially in this field. And, you know, that's just how I am. And you know, it shocks me at times because I sit and think about it. I sit and think about when I started all this compared to now. You know, now I'm talking to guys like you, awesome guys like you. Gene, who is just a legend in my mind in the action figure world. I mean, we just had a guy from an upcoming TV series call in. You know, we had Trapper and Mountain Monsters on. Les Stroud is lined up to come on. So, you know, I guess we're doing something right. We must be.
My mind's kind of boggled right now. That's huge. I mean, we're talking about real big time
major players.
People.
You guys are
this,
major players.
This is you, man. This is you.
You're about to be major players. Yeah, but I mean, I'm not egotistical or anything like that. I mean, you guys know that. I'm proud of myself. I'm surprised with myself. You know, compared to the life I've had up till now, and you know, you guys are about to be big too. You know, Jeff, well, hell, man, I'm envious of you.
If you're going to be envious of me, I can see being envious of Gene because he is just like you said, a legend. But as far as be envious because we are bringing something to life that we wanted when we were kids. I mean, this is
right.
These are, you know, all Gene says it all the time. All else set aside, these are some really fun, cool monsters, you know. And if you just see the kids at these conventions.
If you wouldn't have went to Gene and pushed this, it may have came. Gene, you may have still done it, you know, a couple of years. But Jeff, man, you got to give yourself more credit.
Well, it all came together right at the right time. It was a really good thing. I mean, it was just worked out perfectly.
Yeah. The reality is this is something I've always wanted to do, but unless he came along to help me put it all together, to give me a reason to actually go forward with it, I'm buried in my other work all year round. So unless there's something specific really happening, I don't have time to chase down my own kind of interests down a rabbit hole.
And right.
What I was working on before I met him, you know, I did the statue for Lyle because it was an opportunity to do something I wanted to do. And I can rationalize something if I have it lined up on my docket as a job. But I was doing head studies for a series of quarter-scale statues of a Yeti, a Sasquatch, and an Owlman. And I got about as far as doing the head. And that's right. Where I stalled out because of my regular work. So when Lyle's gig came along, I jumped at it. And then a little while afterwards, Jeff came along and he made the whole thing actually plausible, you know, because, you know, obviously I can do this end of it from soup to nuts. I have all the factory contacts. I have the distribution contacts, but I don't have the money to put behind it. You know, I spend all my time making money just to keep my house afloat in the studio that I built. And so when he came in and added that aspect to it, and on top of that, I was even surprised because not only was he going to bring that into it, but he's just done such a spectacular job in weaving a sales platform for it in terms of a product with the beautiful logo he designed and the concept stuff and everything that goes around it and the stuff he's been putting together to kind of showcase the actual sculpture. And I was just so pleasantly surprised at how Grady is at that, you know, because normally I get involved in things even since back when I was doing the music thing where I get into it with a lot of enthusiastic people who weren't terribly motivated or just not terribly well-rounded enough to do a lot of different things. So
I expected
it may end up like a lot of things where I'd have to wear an awful lot of hats, whereas in this thing I do the three-dimensional part and work out, you know, the designs and things based on what me and him are kind of kicking around ideas-wise and follow it through on all the 3D work. And everything else he handled, you know, all the stuff with the shirts, designing the shirts. Like I said, I mean, the logo is, like, so perfect. I had an idea of what maybe I wanted to see. But he came up with this perfect logo, and even the orientation of the vertical logo and things, it just clicked all together for me. And it's so rare when that kind of a synchronicity kind of comes into place in something like this. It generally is like somebody does something, and you look at it, and you don't know whether you really say anything, and you're like, wow, I spent all this time on it. It sort of looks like shit, but I don't want to say something. And it wasn't like that at all. There's just been this kind of unspoken, this sounded a little little strange, but, you know, just kind of an unspoken communication between what I'm doing and what he's doing and how this stuff kind of dovetails together, you know. It just, you know, obviously this part of it I could have always done, but you kind of need that other piece to make the whole thing become an organization that can actually turn out a product, you know, and that was always the stumbling block, and maybe sometime down the road somebody would have come along that would have actually backed the thing, but I think that this is the way it's supposed to be. Because like I said, everything in my career and this kind of stuff was just weird synchronistic events that happened. I'd see an ad in a magazine, I'd apply. That's what happened with McFarlane. I saw an ad in the back of the comic book, and I applied, and I got hired, and then within a couple of months I was in charge of the sculpting studio. So just that's the way this whole thing has been for me. And when Jeff Kahn came along, we started talking about it. I was like, man, this is something I really want to do. I don't want to jinx it by getting overly psyched. But in the back of my mind, I was like, this is the way everything rolls in my sculpting career. So
I'm going to tell you.
Probably going to be the thing.
We've got 10 minutes left, regardless. I'm going to tell you what I foresee. I foresee, once these figures come out, I foresee you getting contacted by a lot of people in this field, and they're going to want you to do work, do sculpts for them, whether it's action figure or whether it's like Lyle. I really foresee that. I would not
be
surprised. I would not be surprised if one of the big names, say Jeff Meldrum or someone like that, commissions you to do sculpts for him. You know, I really wouldn't be surprised if one of the big names in the field contacts you and says, hey, look, man, I wanted to pick these things. I wanted to pick them perfectly and from a biological point of view. I saw what you did. Would you be interested? I can totally, I can totally see that happening. You know, I don't think it's going to end with just action figures. To be honest with you, I think because I know how these guys are, man. They want. I mean, look for example at these forensic artists that they hire to draw the sightings that these people have, their reports. That's going to, you doing this, it'll probably take it to that next level to where they're not going to a forensic artist to draw it, but they're coming to you to sculpt it.
Well, that's kind of the way I've kind of approached this line anyway. Leading up to this, I was kind of taking witness reports and kind of feeding that all into my own little database, and that's the information that I use to do these faces. So that's the kind of approach I wanted to take to it anyway, you know? So I'd really love to do that. I mean, that would definitely be a nice addendum to this whole thing.
Right, right. And guys, like I said, we got about 10 minutes left. I'm going to get, of course, I'm going to get you guys back on, in a couple of months and get a couple of, get some updates from you and whatnot. And listeners, if you're listening to this archive section, rest assured that you'll get information here, hopefully here first, anything having to do with Creature Replica and this line. Because I'm all over it, you know. And I really want to see this take off. I really want to see this take off. You guys know. I've told you guys in private so many times. I really want to see this take off. I want to see it grow. I want to see it continue. Because it's endless in my mind, you know. And not just because not just the cryptid side of it, but the whole creature, the whole fantasy, if you will, side of it, it's endless. I mean, in my mind, it's genius. You know. Now, I'm not a toy distributor or anything like that, but in my mind, it's genius. It's a never-ending, really, line, assuming the demand remains. And at this point in time, I think there's a huge demand.
The way I kind of look at it is, as long as the quality stays where it needs to be, and we maintain a consistent release schedule, and they sell consistently well enough, that there's no reason why we can't keep going and going and going. I mean, I like to look back at like what McFarlane did. He came out of nowhere, well, not out of nowhere, but he's drawn Spider-Man and Spawn and stuff. And he decided to attack toys in a completely different way. And what he ended up doing is changing the whole toy industry as far as action figures. All of a sudden, everyone had to try to do action figures the way that McFarlane did.
And he set the trend back in the day.
And he was the only guy doing original product lines. Everyone else was just like today. There are very few original product lines. Like, Diamond puts their toe in the water a little bit, like with their Femme Fatales line. About half of those are original, half of them are established characters. And then lately they've been having me design some characters that kind of fit into the Universal Monsters line. Like, I designed a Van Helsing for that line, and we may go further with some of that original stuff in Diamond. But other than people that are a little adventuresome like them, really everyone else just kind of sticks around licensed properties. And McFarlane was the only one that did it in the day. And when they stopped,
and look how successful and look how successful he was. I think there is a huge desire for it. I think that's what people want. I know me personally, I'm tired of the same old shit that the superhero action figures or G.I. Joes, if you will. You go to Walmart and you see a whole half an aisle nothing but wrestling figures. Now I love wrestling, Jeff. I know you do too. But and then you get this stuff that's just rehashes from the 80s. You know, and it's like,
yeah.
It's the same with movies where they start remaking all these movies. Like, come on, have we lost our imagination?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's it. I think there's definitely a market for original product. And it's just that the toy companies, you know, I mean, the climate's tough, too. I mean, the whole industry, when the economy tanked a few years ago, the toy industry took a serious friggin' hit. I mean,
oh, yeah.
And so to do original product
when the oil price is raised, it affected action figures.
Right, yeah. Oh, yeah, and also the price of the minimum wage went up in Asia, too. And on top of that, the price of oil, which they use to create the plastic. So manufacturing is more expensive than it ever was. It's still 1,000 times cheaper to do it in Asia or India or Mexico than here. I mean, you'll probably never see manufacturing come back to the United States. Just way too expensive.
Yeah, but, and that's really, really sad.
Yeah, it's sad, but, you know, that's just the way it works, you know. Just no one would be able to produce toys if they tried to do them here. In the old days, we used to do kind of our rotomolded heads for dolls. Like, we'd do a Supermaster at a rotomolding factory in Ohio, and then we'd send that over to China to do the next stage of the mold, because they'd worry that if the factory screwed the head up, we'd still have the Supermaster here to go back to. But now nobody does that. It's just too friggin' expensive, you know. But I mean, you know, I think the key to this is going to be a good quality product and original figures that are good. I mean, if you're going to make original figures and they suck, then you're shooting yourself in the foot. But it's
that's right. And there's so cool. And like you and I spoke earlier, there's so many different ways. Variants, even paint variants that you can do. There's so many.
Yeah.
You know, guys, we're down to about 3 minutes. I want to go ahead and, I guess, take this time and thank you guys for coming on. I'm definitely going to have you guys on. Looking forward to that. And, you know, just Gene, Jeff, just let me know, you know, whenever you want to come on, if you've got some new news or whatever, you know, it's all good. I appreciate you guys coming on. Thank you for everything. Thank you for the friendship. Love you guys to death, man. And I'll go ahead and close the show and wish you guys a good, safe night.
Sounds good.
Thank you so much, Brian.
No problem, man. Anytime. Y'all take care. Definitely stay in touch.
All right. Catch you later, man.
Take care, man. See ya.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, that'll do for tonight's show. Thank you guys for listening. I really appreciate the support and really appreciate you guys tuning in, listening. Thank you to Elliot Guidry for calling in. Thank you to Greg for calling in as well. Well, next week, Elliot Guidry, Swamp Monsters, Destination America's new television series. Tune in. It'll be an awesome show, and you guys have a good night.